over the weekend. And we need to start with our meeting. DG, is everybody in here? Okay. There are only two apologies for today. There's one apology from the minister who's on study leave for a week. And I accepted the apology. The second apology is from Honorable Munguni. I think we need to start with our meeting. Before we can start with our meeting, DG, there's a commitment by the Department of Public Works in the National Federal Budget of 2012 on the budget review document, page 137. And I would like to quote what is in that page 137. On behalf of Public Works, Minister of Finance said the Department of Public Works should ensure competitive pricing when entering into lease or rental agreements on behalf of the state. Escalation clauses in the new building contracts should be kept to a minimum, as should professional fees. I'm quoting this so that when you do your presentation, you should bear in mind what the commitment is there by the Department of Public Works. We should not just talk about turnaround strategy. Meanwhile, we're not turning anything around for the better of this country. When we talk about turnaround strategy, we're talking about restructuring, we're talking about places, we're talking about the wrongs that are there. DG, without any waste of time, I think we need to start with the turnaround strategy, and then EPWP will follow suit so that we can be able to detect where you are going to place this, what are the changes that are going to take place there. And also in the very same document that I quoted on page 111, the expanded public works program grants have been restructured and simplified so that provinces and municipalities are better positioned to create jobs. My spirit is very high, especially when it comes to EPWP. If generally this has been simplified, if the municipalities and the provinces will be able to access money with ease and create a lot of jobs. Over to you, DG. Mike, Mama.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, thank you for inviting us to come and present public works turnaround strategy and also the EPWP. Let me quickly, I'll ask the team from public works to quickly introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Stanley Anderson. I'm the DDG for the expanded public works program.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, I'm CJ Abrams, and I'm the Chief Director of EPWP Partnership Support.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Mpongwa Shaba, and I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Public Works.
Good morning, members. My name is John Lewis, advisor to the minister.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Ruat Mashamo, office of the minister.
Chairperson is here today to present to you the turnaround strategy of the department. The turnaround, we have various aspects to it. We have the stabilization process, which would eventually lead to the transformation in public works, which may take years to come. Just to outline from the beginning that the turnaround has various aspects to it. Stabilize the department to do what it has to do better, and ensure that there is ongoing sustainable transformation of the department. We know Chairperson where we're coming from as a department. We also know the crisis that we're in. We also know where we are now. The facts are public, they are in the AG's report. They are in the media, the police debacle. They are also with National Treasury and the AG. But we also have to leave you here very clear about where we are going and taking the department. It's important that I stress that fundamental decisions have to be taken to turn around public works. The good thing about this disclaimer, it provides an opportunity for us to do that which we have probably ignored for some time and pretend as if it's not there. Baba Gayla and Swati, can you come and sit here so that you can look at it? At the DG directly to see if. No, come and sit here and face it. DG?
Thank you.
Public Works is the custodian of the immovable assets of the state. Like I said last week, this is the worst estate of the nation. We're talking here about properties that have to be taken care of properly for the benefit of future generations of this country. In looking at the current slide, Chairperson, the truth of the fact of the matter is Public Works is a custodian of the assets, immovable assets that belong to the Republic. And if you compare, which is quite a tricky comparison with the private sector, a public works portfolio is 7 times larger than the most significant private companies. You would look at companies like Old Mutual and other property companies in the country, you find that what they are responsible for is actually a drop in the ocean if you compare to what Public Works with its current capabilities and skills is supposed to. Public Works, if it were a business, Chairperson, it would be declared probably insolvent a long time ago, but we are not business. We don't measure the bottom line. We are a public, we are a state department. But if you compare Public Works with some private companies, you would notice that our profit is about 1.6% compared to 16% what is there in the market. If you look at our responsibility again in terms of this property management that has landed us in trouble, notably through the leases, because most people see this property portfolio as part of the transformation of the property sector in the country, and most people want to own properties. But if you compare the current staff of Public Works to the private companies, you'll find that we have about 4,300 employees, and those companies that are running the property portfolio, property business, would have 400. So we're significantly larger as a department. The question that arises then, what percentage of that 4,300 is dedicated to the management of this property portfolio that belongs to the department? Chairperson, I'm just going to take you through a very quick slide to show you where we come from and what are the
major initiatives that the department has taken before, which have probably some of them been implemented properly, some of them implemented not that well, so that we can begin to have a sense of the history and the importance of this department. Public Works under Minister Jeff Carter, for example, many things were introduced during that time, and those things were consolidated under Minister Park. If you look on your right, honorable members, on the presentation there, Public Works implemented what was called then a community-based public works program, for which we received the budget and we implemented the program. That community-based public works program was converted to the EPWP. For the EPWP, as you all know, honorable members, we don't get direct budget. We actually tell people that we need so many work opportunities targets in order to be able to meet the targets of the EPWP. Over the many years, Chairperson, we have developed a white paper on construction industry development, which remains has never been reviewed. We also laid the ground by coming up with a white paper on public works beyond the 21st century. And may I remind the members that we are now in the 21st century. These white papers, Chairperson, were derived from the RDP, if you recall, going back to the beginning of our democracy. We also established built environment councils and accorded those councils various powers through various acts that are at the back of the strategic plan that you may have seen over the years. But we also established the CIDP, which is supposed to be a regulation and the transformation body for the construction industry. We took the implementation of the white paper further, honorable members, by establishing the contractor development program and also the white paper on Giyama, which then led us to the Act itself. We also, Chairperson, over the years, introduced the concept of the PMTE, which I tried to explain in a few minutes last week. And on the extreme right, you will see that all the various councils that are listed at the back of the strategic plan actually fall under the Council for Built Environment, CBE, which is responsible for the regulation of the built environment industry. If you look at the number of DGs that you have helped, honorable members, the facts in front of you speak for themselves. I don't know if we are the only department, but if we are not the only department, we must be one of those odd departments that have had so many director generals over the years. The next slide, Chairperson, just an issue of this historical journey, continuation of the historical journey of public works and workshops. Those workshops were discontinued during that period, early 90s. We are trying to resuscitate those workshops because the discontinuation of those workshops, we have noticed that now is working against the support that should be accorded to programs like artisan training, learnership, etc., etc. If you also look on the right of my right, I guess it will be your left or right. If you on my right of the slide, this would be during that time when the workshops were discontinued. We also introduced the project management approach. We have not really done well on that because over the years we have had varying experiences of spending and underspending the budget. But also we have undertaken various organizational reviews, and some of them have not been followed through over the years, which has, I think, also contributed to what we have now. We also recognize the importance of service delivery improvements, and I was part of that program, which was called the MISEL, the whole point of introducing us to the cell was because our clients, including all of you honorable members, have always been very unhappy about our service delivery record. We introduced the MISELE. We trained the MISELE facilitators from all the 11 regions of public works. We also, through the PMTE, introduced the whole notion, which was its first, of a government department interacting with its clients by asking for them to pay for the services the department is offering. We have also had a share, if you look at the bottom of that slide, of our corruption investigation. But you would also, I think at this point it's important to acknowledge the importance of the president signing that proclamation, because if probably the president had not signed the proclamation to have the SIU coming into public life. What the minister would be sharing with you around some of the investigations of the SIU, you would see for yourself that it was important for the president to actually sign that proclamation. That the investigations of the SIU, honorable members, are going deeper into things that we would not have seen through just normal internal auditing. The scale of corruption in the department is so deep that it's scary. I know that you've seen ministers with the Minister of Finance talking about getting assistance again from Treasury about the management of leases. That particular action itself is indicative of the level and depth of corruption in the department. You will be shocked. Challenges facing the department. The next slide. Just to emphasize the increasing rate of change of executive and administrative leadership, we have lost very good people before. We have had our share of acting DGs, DDGs, and chief directors over the years. But also, we have had limited success in the implementation of the white paper, both white papers and the property and construction charters. Honorable members, you would recall that those charters were signed by the late minister in 2005. If you ask us where, how far we're doing in terms of the targets that are in those charters, maybe what could also be important going forward is for us to come here and present the targets and have a discussion around these targets. Honorable members, you'll also remember that the property is a constitutional matter. There's a property clause in the Constitution. But to transform the property sector is not going to be easy. Hence, at times, you find people also chasing after the properties of the country, which are under the custodianship of public works, because the property clause in the Constitution, it protects property rights. So it's not something that you wake up and you say, I want that building, and therefore it's mine. There's got to be a regulatory process, which would include, amongst others, the expropriation bill to be tabled in Parliament to ensure that there is fundamental transformation of the property sector without necessarily violating the Constitution. The fourth bullet under these challenges, the Chairperson and Honorable Members, we've had obviously challenges with our systems, processes, and monitoring and evaluation and reporting. Hence, the irritation of Honorable Members when staff from the department will come here and present various figures that continue to differ every time we appear before you. The issue of client dissatisfaction, Chairperson, is huge. The issue of systems is also linked to that. You find that what I've experienced, at least sitting in this hot seat for just over a month now, we would say that client so-and-so has not paid us for accommodation charges, for accommodation. You meet with client so-and-so, and you discover that client so-and-so has actually paid us. We are clueless that client ABC has paid us. So we have to deal with that. The allegations of corruption are receiving attention. Where we are now, the disclaimer is in the public space. I said that when you get a disclaimer, you probably go into a defense because you think what you think you know what you are doing. But the disclaimer says you don't know what you are doing. But even if you knew what you are doing, probably, even if you think you knew that what you are doing, you probably just want to defend yourself. The disclaimer, it opens an opportunity, honorable member, to deal with the Department of Public Works decisively and turn it around. We don't have much time because we have to turn it around, but we also have to deliver the services because government business continues. We have a budget allocation. We have to deliver and continue to deliver infrastructure for the country. You would also have noted, honorable members, that in terms of our role in the current infrastructure investment, public works has to sit up straight and deliver while dealing with the issues of this turnaround. This is a balanced act that is going to need bold people, committed people, and patriotic people. So the disclaimer has been coming for years, actually. I've been with the department for a while. I've seen it coming. And now it's here. The issue of the budget. If you look at our strategic plan, which we presented to you in March, the bulk of that budget is under Program 2. Honorable members, they need to scrutinize that Program 2. Program 2 has so many sub-programs. That's where things get hidden, corrupted, not explained properly. Because the strategic plan will come to you as a bulk document talking about all the programs. But you need to pay attention to Program 2 and Program 3, which is the EPWP. Under Program 2, you would have various sub-programs under there, but the bulk of infrastructure spend goes under that program. We have also had our experiences. Right now, we're sitting with an underspending in the infrastructure sub-program under the very same program too, which is quite huge. What makes us not to spend government money that we're given to spend? Lack of proper planning, project planning. Later on, you'll hear under the stabilization intervention, what we plan to do with that. This is not only understanding of clients' money, but it's also understanding of public works capital budget. We say we're going to build that building, and then because we don't plan on time, we find that there's understanding in our own public works infrastructure budget. And Chairperson was also in the public space, is also underspending around incentive funds under the EPWP. There's also a tendency of shifting of funds by the department. When that one does not work, we shift it to another program, but it still doesn't get spent anyway, because when there's no plan, it will still not be spent. Let me share with you that we're an infrastructure department, so if you're going to engage in maintenance maintenance project, you need to plan 1 year in advance for maintenance. If you're going to construct a building for client A, you need to plan 2 and 2.5 years in advance. If you don't do that, don't go and ask for money from Treasury, because you would not have done your work. It even gets more complicated if you're going to undergo site clearance. The issue of site clearance has received public works attention. If we are going to build a police station for a client, it's just that all of these things are inside the department, but they don't get activated to accelerate service delivery. As an infrastructure department, we also gullible to the March expenditure spike from delayed project implementation. And then we will be running around talking about quick wins so that we can actually therein also and light corruption, because while we are trying to spend government money, in a rush, then the controls get loosened, and at times it doesn't really work well, even if the project is delivered. Lack of technically sound budget proposal. Treasury has been on our case on this one. We would submit proposal for infrastructure, which should be linked to the budget, and we would find that in terms of our technical capability, we are really lacking in terms of providing those sound infrastructure and proposals. The next bullet, Chairperson, second from the bottom, repeats what I've already emphasized, that capacity to plan. And with a disclaimer, obviously, lack of adequate finance skills and poor financial management. But, honorable members, a disclaimer that just does not only result from poor financial management. The disclaimer is also a combination of many issues, including those financial controls. And also, the disclaimer itself shows that there's been violations of the PFMA and treasury regulations, including supply chain management rules. When you delay construction projects, honorable members, you would also have seen this during the World Cup, the cost of our savior. But when you delay construction of projects, the cost escalates. We have various examples whereby we start a project at 500 million and we finish this project at a billion. Now, that on its own, it shows lack of technical planning. And division of labor. You've got to have quantity surveyors to actually assist you with the costing of projects. Once you lack that technical capability inside the department, there's going to be problems in terms of the variation orders. Let me illustrate also one thing. We've refurbished our building, the current building that we are in. I would like to invite the honorable members to visit us. It's a beautiful building. We have had your visit before, but maybe now you need to come and visit the new one. That building, the initial estimate, 68 million. We finished it at 251 million. Now this is the depth of the crisis that requires this turnaround. If we continue like this, we're taking money that should be going for housing, for health, for education, and spending it as if it's our money. Job creation. If you're boasting of a budget of around 20 billion, including client budget, you should be able to say to the country, how many jobs have you created with this money, given the high unemployment rate in the country? We're working on that. To ensure that from those billions we can at least show credible numbers of jobs to be created from the investment in infrastructure. Chairperson and honorable members, I cannot, I have to emphasize that in the department itself there is low worker morale. At our level we can at least uplift ourselves, but must also not outplay the morale of staff that are not sitting in the executive and watching what is happening in them. Now, the next slide talks about service area challenges. If you look at the service areas that public works is responsible for, and policy, the regulatory function for the construction and property sector, you would look at the challenges, Chairperson, and you would see that there's conflict of interest in terms of how we're currently configured, in terms of being the implementer and the regulator. You would recall last week I said the existence of that policy branch, it came from the abandoned decision to establish a property management agent and to have public works looking like a department of transport with a regulatory role. I guess that's why we find ourselves now implementing conflicting processes. Funding, capacity, and strategic leadership. we're correcting that with the turnaround. Asset management, I know that over the years of being in the department, Parliament has been very critical, rightfully so, about our asset register. May I also quickly share with you that that asset register and Sen Yang, that is assisting us to come up with a credible asset register and report to Mintop every Monday. That function, Chairperson, the DDG responsible for that, that function has been taken away from her. The company reports directly to my office to make sure that we get what we need to get right around the asset register. Now, it's incomplete, it's inaccurate. The condition of the building, there are missing records, unusable land, disposals. If you look at Prestige as a service area, Prestige would be honorable members. Our Prestige clients are honorable members. Poor planning, management, lack of policy norms and standards. During the Sona Week, Chairperson, I honored what I said to you I would do. Sitting in this hot seat now, I have no one to blame. I said I will visit all the estates where you live. Acacia Park, all of them. I did not concern myself with going for dinners and everything. I just spent time looking at where exactly we are in terms of your accommodation needs. It's receiving my attention and the minister's attention. The minister has been debriefed on this because you can't remote manage that which you are responsible for. You've got to be there. You've got to be listening to honorable members about their needs where they live. Property management and facilities. Like I said earlier, if we were a business, we would have gone under a long time ago. We charge very low because also we don't have confidence that we'll give quality service. So it has always been, there's always been this tension in terms of implementing the user charge principle. Bad debt, maintenance over expenditure, the backlog. But Chairperson, I just want to say that the issue of the maintenance backlog, though, is not exclusively our own making. There has not been investment, and it's on public record now. Major investment in infrastructure in the country. So that includes the building where you live and also the buildings where we are working as public servants. It's an issue of the country having inherited so many backlogs and the competing interests. We have education, we have health, we have housing, all of these things, they need to be resourced equally. Skill shortages, underutilized and unused properties. There is a particular building that honorable member now will be happy because eventually we started attending to this building. Every time I would come to Parliament and they would mention this HGD building, I would be like, oh my gosh, it's at the corner. He would even know where it is. Honorable member Makubane, I remember, was one of those members who talked about this building, downtown Pretoria. That building is undergoing refurbishment. Poor leasing, SCM open for corruption, poor client relations, aging, owned properties, and unreliable arrangements. Chairperson, there is no quick or no short route to the issue of leasing. We would just beg for your patience. The entire lease portfolio of public works has to be overhauled. Why we have to do this overhaul? We shall forever be responding to media investigative journalism if we don't do that as well. But that's not the key reason why we're doing this. The leakages in these leases will give you nightmares. Inflation of prices and buildings that have remained empty but we've paid for them and we've built the clients. Clueless that the clients actually are not even occupying this building. but we pay for them. And we build the client. The poor client builds us, or pays us, rather. And we find that these buildings have been remaining empty through the leasing period. Construction project management. We are under-resourced again, honorable members. Built environment skill shortage. The built environment skill shortage, Chairperson, is not also exclusively a public work and responsibility. It is a throughput that goes from secondary school to university. If the country does not implement a focused HRD strategy, we shall forever be complaining about built environment skills. I want to reiterate what I said last week. Most of the built environment professionals who are working in these big five construction companies, if you interview them, you find them, some of them, if not most of them, have actually before worked for public work. So we need to improve on that. But also, Chairperson, public work, together with National Treasury, public works represented by the Construction Industry Board, the CIDB, developed a tool, the Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program. This tool should have assisted us to implement and deliver infrastructure over the years. We are the department who sponsored this tool to all the 3 tiers of government. We have just ignored the usage of that tool. We're bringing it now on board to come and assist us to implement programs on time and within the budgeted framework. Next service area, special functions, ICR, Chairperson and honorable members. This inner city regeneration program was approved by cabinet. We did not sit in our meetings and we said we want to implement the inner city regeneration program. It's one of those programs that has been unfortunately been affected by this high turnover of managers in the department. There is a cabinet decision that says all government departments must stay downtown Pretoria. What we are grappling with now, because downtown Pretoria, I guess, does not look sexy to some government departments. Government departments now want to run away from. But the whole notion of inner city regeneration is self-explanatory. We were linking, when we took that decision years ago, we linked that to urban regeneration and to build a government precinct within Pretoria, which would also attract investment into the capital. So I just want to confirm with you that those of you who have heard this program before, please bear with us that it was an endorsed cabinet decision. Therein at times that we fight with our clients because we say we have identified that building at the corner of Hamilton and Van der Waals. No, I want to go to Hatfield. No, but you can't go because that building belongs to the state. It's not a building that we are going to lease. It's part of our portfolio. No, I want to go to Centurion. So there are some of the fights that you don't know that are behind the scenes. But I want to assure you that that was a cabinet decision. Now, we must also say when cabinet has spoken, do we have the right to turn around and say, I want to go and live in Centurion just because you saw a beautiful building? Then where is the commitment in terms of urban generation of our city so that they don't become or they don't decay? EPWP as a service area. Honorable members, probably everybody knows public works, knows us about the EPWP. Because we have not managed at least our property sector, property function, the service area very well, it is a public secret that we are known about the expanded public works program. It will be important, therefore, that honorable members, we all make sure that the EPWP continues to succeed, given all the challenges that it's facing, especially at local government level. And the AG's report says it all about the state of our municipalities, and the Treasury report says it all about the state of these municipalities. If those municipalities don't turn around and become functional municipalities, the blame cannot be with Public Works, because Public Works is there to assist the municipalities to implement EPWP, and we don't have a mandate to run municipalities. Corporate services. Last week, I said to you, Chairperson, one of the areas that we have left on was to come up with a human capital plan that speaks to the need. That 4,300 I mentioned earlier, the bulk of those people are not necessarily technical people to resource Public Works going forward. Question therefore arises, what are you going to do? Because we don't wake up and fire everybody. This is a constitutional state, and you have to actually make sure that whatever that you do is within the precepts of the Constitution. Most of the things that are mentioned here, I've already alluded to them, but I also want to just pick up on the issue of ineffective internal auditing. That unit is also under-resourced. Over the years, we've relied on support from the various internal auditing companies. But we actually need to get that one up as part of the turnaround. The organizational structure. The organizational structure, Chairperson, has also been this matter that is running ahead of the strategy of the department. Poor SDM checks and balances. I said last week, we adjudicate over 150 million worth of tenders per week. Sorry, per month. You do the sum. That's why then it becomes tempting for someone to say, you know what, it's alpha 1%, you know, under the table, 150 million. I don't want to even talk about the figure. I'm just saying that the Makubana, if I were to negotiate 1% under the table of 150 million per month over 11 months at least, I wouldn't be sitting here now. I would be set for life. Now, whose money is that? It's taxpayers' money. Where are we going? The turnaround. I will allow the members to go through this on their own so that they actually look at this term during their private time. But you can't do this with consultants running around your department. Like the minister said, you have to do it with staff. That is the focus. We beg for your patience. You can't parachute a company and say, come and turn them around. They will turn around. It's not going to work. I will illustrate why. Oh, it's that that's the name of the author. Yeah. This is how this is going to look. We had to scale down with this slide, Chairperson. Otherwise, if we did not scale them down, I'd be sitting here speaking to you the whole day. The minister would be there as the project sponsor, working with the other ministers, as he alluded to before. Then we would have the technical advisory committee, Chairperson, that has helped us to put together to do the rapid review of the department. So that technical advisory committee will continue to exist and would report to the minister and the DG. The DG's office would have this support team with a team leader, a change agent to deal with those soft issues of low staff morale, to have a strategist as part of that team, and some admin staff. And then all those five branches at the bottom in blue, those heads of branches will continue to work for Public Works, the DDG project, Manda Mabuza, acting DDG Inner City Regeneration Program, Peter Chapasco. The DDG for that chapter was suspended from this SIU, issues emanating from the SIU investigation. He's going through disciplinary processes and everything. DDG expanded, so that will be Ricky Samuels, the one under United, who was there before. DDG EPWP, the honorable colleague next on my left. DDG Construction and Property Policy Regulation, Ms. Lydia Beatus. DDG Asset Investment Management, Sasa Suban. You remember I said that the asset register intervention has been taken away from her so that there is a turnaround around this asset register thing. She's still running with the other, running the branch, but they've just taken away the asset register enhancement project. And then the acting DDG Corporate Services, his name is Mr. Lakemo Chalibane. He's the Chief Director of Marketing and Communications in the department, so he's acting there. As you all know, that the DDG there is also undergoing disciplinary processes, Mr. Sam Bukela. And then we have the CFO and Ms. Kefu. The acting COO in the department, that position is also one of those unfortunate positions, because some of the issues that are also coming from the disclaimer are issues that also show weak operations. And the acting COO is Bucha Matutle, who's now deployed to Limpopo to be the acting HOD in Limpopo. We're bringing in a second man from one of our entities, Mr. Nzezeko Wazube, to come and act in that position, because now it remains affected by the deployment. But Chaperson has reported.
Okay.
Chaperson, this is the composition of the support team. Minister said we have to put a layer to manage the stabilization projects, which I'll read out to you, and do hand holding.
The Ernst and Young team, where do they fit into that the previous diagram?
Remember that they are a company that has been brought in specifically to look at the asset register. So it falls under DDG asset management. If you look at the bottom, the blue block in the organogram, that's where it's located, the asset register. Team leader, we have to have a team leader, we have to have a change manager, we have to have a monitoring and evaluation and reporting person, a strategic content advisor, and administrative support. Then we have to have functional specialists, supply chain, because that's where also the leakage is, public finance, built environment, specialist engineers in their various, we'd have to bring in an engineer to be part of that team. Asset management or property management, specialist, and human resource / legal. These are the specialists that will be part of the support team or stabilization team to make sure that the stabilization interventions are well managed and produce quality results.
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt. This is very important because we're now getting to the core of how to turn it around, what we're doing. I wonder if we can ask, where are these people going to, where are they coming from, all these specialists that you're now drawing into assist? Where do they, are they coming from the department, other departments, private sector, where are they coming from?
They're coming from, we're trying to get secondments from other departments where it's possible. We're trying to get people from our entities to be seconded, but we're also getting professionals who are out there, and we are working with Treasury on the options, or we've already worked with Treasury on the options so that we comply with all the Treasury regulations and public service clips to bring them on board. So some of them will be coming from outside. I know that, so for example, if you are looking for asset managers in the country, most of them you find them in these private companies. And it's very difficult to find them to come and work for government, at least for what we are paying, because that's a tax thing. But we're really looking at externally and also within government and also from our entities where it's possible. So it's a mix of places where we are looking. What will the support team do? Oversee the stabilization project. The project will have they have formal terms of reference. And the asset register is one stabilization project that is skimming ahead. We probably may have to come and do a presentation on that, where we are, what did we discover, and when will that project complete. We have a specifically assigned team leader who is the DDG of that branch. But for this particular asset register area, that has been at least moved to be managed from the digital office. They will also, the stabilization project will also have a clear performance framework and time frame. Now, I said earlier that Treasury had done, working with us, a rapid review. Report for the department, which was presented to the minister by end of December. That rapid review report is leading us to actually undertake systemic reviews in each business area. The minister continues with myself to meet with the various branches and trying to dig deep into what needs to be attended to so that the turnaround become collectively owned, but also driven by public works employees, supported by this team of experts who will be interrogating every deliverable that is called a stabilization intervention, so that we don't repeat the mistakes of presenting information that is incomplete or wrong, etc. There would be so each business area, in this case I'm talking about, be it asset management, what are the issues in HR? What are the issues in that need our attention under the disclaimer? So it will be those issues that we have to dig deep in some of them to find out the level of financial capability. We're talking about it now because the disclaimer says that we do have shortages in terms of financial management, but we'll be digging deep as we are hand-holding people to ensure that we don't have or we address the current financial challenges. The various issues that are mentioned there, there will be documenting of those systemic reviews, which will be presented as a turnaround process, and also the reporting of what exactly we have discovered during the system review. Yes. Yes. Okay. It will also be tasked with the development of the framework for transformation based on further system reviews and feedback that we are getting and successes emanating from the stabilization process. Human resources, change management, Chairperson and honorable members, is key and central to the success of this. And also, recognition of and building on capabilities of existing staff, and also learning from other departments that have gone through this work before, like Home Affairs, to ensure that we can see what is the indicators that we do right, that we can copy. Recruit qualified staff while training and trainable current staff. Open also recruitment and make sure that there is investment in human resource development in the department, and also develop relations with tertiary institutions and fill the vacancies that are there. Build an appropriate corporate service unit that recruits, serves, and retains the right skills, and develop a strong finance unit. And also deal with wrongdoers in the department. I just want to illustrate quickly how this whole thing will pan out. In terms of the current findings, if you look at that blue line, this is where we are now as public works, the existing capacity of the department. If you look at the black line, that's where ideally we should be. Now, if you look in between the brown part, the stabilization team has to handhold that blue line until it reaches the black line and ensure that transformation continues beyond stabilization. We have to work with all employees in the department. Otherwise, if you don't do that, if the literature is wrong, if you don't do that hand-holding and working together to build better public work, then we can actually, when those experts and everybody else has left, we find ourselves back to square one. Chairperson and honorable members, this is a presentation of how this whole thing is going to be mapped out. Stabilization actions, asset register, list management, clean audit, PMTE debt recovery, IDIP support, and audit of areas of progress and challenges. We would add more in that list in terms of the stabilization projects that we are focusing on. As we continue to implement, we'll see what else to add on. I've already spoken about that infrastructure delivery improvement program support. Systemic reviews, I've also alluded to that we have to embark on a process of those systemic reviews, building on the rapid review report. And the last one would be the transformation agenda, which would eventually result in a better public work. These are the stabilization actions, Chairperson. I will also leave that. The only thing that is important for me just to mention, oversight by the DGM support team, working with all the heads of branches, and there will also be dedicated resources for that. The systemic review, we will continue to meet with the various business areas in the department to ensure that we dig deep into other issues that may not necessarily be reflected in the public report. But there also has to be staff participation in all of this systemic review. The transformation agenda, transformation is a long process, honorable members. It's not going to happen next year or this year, but it will be informed by what is unearthed during the stabilization process. This is just a mapping of what we have already done, the rapid review of public work stabilization action to deal with the disclaimer, looking at all the issues that need to relate to, asset leases, continued review. That's just a mapping of where we are and where we seek to go. Earlier on, I focused on the service area. But if you look on your right, because the government is implementing an outcome-based approach, we should be having a well-functioning built environment sector. Under asset management, the outcome should be an optimized portfolio of assets owned and leased. That should be the outcome, because we measure impact in terms of the investment through the budget. property management, one of the things that we need to pay attention to, the outcome is efficient records. Because one of the things that's coming out very clear in terms of these leases, contracts are lost or have not been signed. And you can go back in terms of paper trail and find out where are these contracts. Construction, cost-effective service delivery with the outcome, the special function with the inner city, functional inner city, or habitable inner city, functioning industry standards maintained, EPWP, jobs should be created and skills developed. Corporate services, the outcome related to that functional stream, proper account internal capabilities, efficient, and effective at the end. Summary chapter 2. Crisis areas need to be addressed quickly. We have a job to do for the country, even if we have all these challenges. Short-term solutions must enable longer-term stability. Some improvements are dependent on fundamental transformation that is a time-consuming to implement. Turnaround actions must not further reduce existing levels of operational performance. Turnaround actions must be based on adequate analysis and understanding of the problems and potential cost-effective solutions. Prioritization of critical actions, honorable members, in a logical system. Adequate resourcing of turnaround actions. Staff must support in the part of the turnaround. Necessary external expertise must leave a legacy in the department. The turnaround effort must be resourced with dedicated capacity. Focus should be on the goodwill and positive contribution of all staff. Maladministration, corruption, and poor performance to be dealt with decisively. And under the guidance of the minister, the department has a structured turnaround, a strategy, a dedicated. We'll have a dedicated support team that will plan, manage, monitor, report on the turnaround actions that I've listed before, stabilization action to finish and all of that. Thank you, really.
Thank you, DG. Honorable members, that's the presentation. Honorable members, you are 10 here, and I'm allocating 30 minutes for questions and clarifications, which says one member will qualify for three questions. Honorable Dreyer, Honorable Sitole, Honorable Swate, Honorable Gayla, Honorable Madala, Honorable Madropa, Honorable Baba Bubani, Honorable Nuwani, Honorable Wanyamalila, Honorable November. And that over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got one question consisting actually of two sections. It deals with staff, and staff that are either redundant because they don't actually contribute productively to the organization, as we've seen your relative to other organizations in the private sector, you're hugely overstaffed at the ratio of, 4,300 compared to 400 staff in areas in the private sector. So it seems inevitable that you're going to have to dismiss some people to actually make it a smaller and more competent department. We're going to need labor experts to do that according to proper procedure so you don't sit with a lot of legal actions afterwards. So do you have labor experts consulting you? Where do they fit in? And secondly, there also then, of course, maladministration, corruption, and poor performance to be dealt with decisively, you said in the last paragraph. That's also very clear because some people are simply exploiting the system to their own personal gain, and they've got to be dealt with very decisively. So you're going to need a lot of legal advice and legal services. You want to expedite disciplinary hearings in a fair manner with proper hearings, but it can't last forever. They must once found guilty, these people must be gotten rid of and they must be punished. So how are we going to deal with these two issues? The whole implementation, the success of this plan is obviously on the people who have to do that. So you've got to do with people who are honest, who are committed, and competent.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, Chair, we must thank the department because of this roadmap strategy, because it will show that they are going to make a difference in the department. But my concern, Chair, is that one of leadership, because if thank you, Chair, for protecting. Chair, what I want to find out, my concern is that leadership, because most of our leadership in the department are 18. So how long will be in that position? Because we cannot say you are going forward to interview. We have a lot of acting leadership. And the shifting of funds, because that's the problem if you are always talking about shifting of funds. Because it is actually not a shifting, it's a dumping. Because of most of funds have been dumped to municipalities. And the moral of workers, because if there's no incentive in the posting of morals, how are we going to handle that one? And the last one, Chair, is that one of mindset of workers and leadership, because we can do anything that we want to do, but if the mindset are not correct, how are we going to change those mindset? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Team DG. My question is with regard to the first line on the third slide, when you were comparing the companies that is running property management and with the department. I also want to find out why, if you've got more than 4,300 staff and then the private companies only employing 400 people, but the 400 is doing better than the 4,300. Why is that happening? How are you going to deal with that in the future so that we can turn around this the department? And my second question is with regard to the EPW. You've indicated that some of the projects are run at another spheres of government, e.g. the local government, and you don't have control over the local government. So I just want to find out, are you not actually subsidizing that project? So that if you are subsidizing, what are you going to do to make sure that those who are actually getting the money, they must actually give service that is needed by the project? And the other one is, my last one, is with regard to the inner city regeneration program that you mentioned. You said that that was actually endorsed by cabinet, but some of the clients from some of the departments who are clients are actually not wanting to stick to that program. So I just want to find out, if those people, those departments doesn't want to stick to those endorsements, are you actually allowing them to go out of the agreement and get properties outside of that agreement? What are you doing in terms of that? Because if that is binding, I think you should actually make sure that it's binding. So I just want to know, what are you doing? Are you actually giving them those loopholes to go outside? Thank you very much.
The document is very good on paper. It is about the problems that are within the department. DG, the problem within the department are listed units and construction projects. The construction projects were problems before listed units, whereby tenders are escalated and given to so and so and things, blah, 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 blah. Now, where I have a problem here, and I think you need to really look at that, your staff is a low moral within your staff because they are involved in this. And now, I have a problem when you say you're going to have these DDGs in the same conditions. What I would do is I would put them in the same positions because they are implicated because you won't get to the core of your problem if you keep them in the same position. That is my suggestion to you. You've got a staff that's got a very low moral. In my region, which you are attended to before, I know there is a complaint that is gone out because of the low moral of the staff. And when you speak to the staff or when you hear and know the service provided, you will find out that the real problem is your senior guys, your DDGs, next level. Their names are mentioned all the time. So I would suggest that you just don't put them, just put them in other positions. That is my suggestion. Secondly, you talked about skill shortage. It's quite true, but we need to do something about it. You are right again that most of the consultants, employ people that are from public works. That is quite true. You groom them for somebody else. But why don't you turn this to be around to your advantage? How do you turn it around? And I said that before, that every contract that's over above a million, there must be conditions that if you use a consultant, they must train people or have some intakes of some interns. The same applies with contractors that they must train. It must not only be OP, but every project that goes out from government must be able to say, I have trained so many people. That's the second suggestion.
Thanks, Jefferson. My first question is covered by member Rhea. My main worry is about the bulk of the useless staff which is in the department, because in these days we are anything. When you are being dismissed as a worker, you run to the labor union. Then they'll cover you, CCMA and so forth. Are there any strategies made by the department sitting down or strategize with the labor unions when taking this turnaround strategy? Because that is very, very important. My second question is the minister mentioned about the inter-ministerial committee, mentioned the Minister of Home Affairs, Finance, Minister, and the President that they meet. But then when I'm thinking, these people are so busy in their own department, in their own work, is it going to be feasible for them to meet with the Department of Public Works trying to strategize the department to do this turnaround strategy, because these are the busy people. How is that going to happen? Again, I think we as a committee, we do need the department to tell us about the issues which can only need a short-term and a long-term solutions for us to understand exactly that at least this issue can be resolved in a certain time, and this one can take a long time. Also, the property sector, I think it's very, very important. I think we strategize as a committee. We definitely need a presentation. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the presentation by the acting DG. I think it's promising on paper. But Honorable Chair, you know the acting DG has indicated that it's going to utilize the same people in the same position that they were. Measurable objectives or plans is critical to have successful turnaround strategy. How is the department envisaging to achieve these challenges, since the understanding of us as portfolio committee members is that your senior staff does not have performance contracts? how are you going to measure whether this turnaround strategy is effective? And if it is not effective, how are you going to act, because there are no performance contracts? Secondly, Chair, the acting DG talked about balancing the act as well as the ineffective internal auditing. I want to check whether this, he talked about balancing the act, talking about focusing on the turnaround strategy while also focusing on the service delivery. I want to check how feasible is this, taking into account that also he has mentioned that public works leasing has to be overhauled because it's part of service delivery. How is it going to happen simultaneously when everything is in leasing is overhauled and then also focusing on the service delivery? And also she indicated that the department has been relying on external auditing. He talked about ineffective internal auditing. But how is the department going to measure whether service providers or consultants that have been hired are really transferring skills to the department or personnel in the department? How are they going to really deal with that? Also, lastly, Chair, I want to check around the issue of the EPWP. How is the department intend to improve monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the EPWP incentive grant, as well as infrastructure development and maintenance of immovable assets? Because the acting DG has indicated that it has been their failure to really focus on those particular matters. Now, how are they going? Because the department is known by EPWP, but also the department is known that it's failing the EPWP and the people of the country. So how are they going to really focus on this one? Chair, I can pause there because the chair is pointing. I was going to deal with the last one.
That was the fifth one. Wanyamalila? Oh, Bamakuvan? Wanyamalila? 30 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. There's only, I'm going to ask only one thing here, that is unusable land. I would want to know what kind of land is that, because, I mean, if the land belongs to the government should see to it that that land should be used properly. We've got a lot of people who are stranded without jobs, who are supposed to be working, but because of the shortage of the jobs, they can't work. This land could be given to, for instance, the MKMPA, the veterans, all those people that are stranded without jobs, they can be given this unusable land, as you put it, and then they can work on the land, given all the implements that can be used by them on the farms. Then they will be able to supply all their stuff to the market and be able to keep their families running.
Who's to follow? Wanyamabila?
Thank you, Shepard. Okay, thank you, Shepard. I would like to express the
go straight to the question.
Okay.
We are 18 on 30
minutes. Okay. My first question is around, actually it's been asked by one of the members about the implementation of the strategy. The strategy looks very, very good, but how are they going to implement it with the same staff members that are really involved in a way? And coupled to that is the monitoring system of the implementation of this of the strategy. How is it going to be monitored? Is it going to be monitored by the same person, or is it going to be monitored by Ernst and Young? My last question is about the charters. I would like to make it very clear to the institution that ever since the introduction of the charter, the property and the construction. They were never presented to the portfolio committee. That I'm sure of. Because we were complaining during the time of comment being was the chairperson. The public web kept on saying, we'll do it, and ultimately it dwindled and it was never presented to the portfolio committee. Would like the present activity to make sure that it's presented to the portfolio committee and then we're able to have our inputs on those factors.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of your questions have been asked by my colleagues, so I will not repeat that. Chairperson, I think also one of the challenges of the department is the issue of the debt collection, the failure of the client department to pay the Department of Public Works after you've paid the leases. And also you've paid on their behalf the rates and taxes, then how are you going to deal about that? Because it affects, according to me, it affects the program or the operation of the department. Then the other one is the issue of the internal audit unit and the audit committees. Because, you know, moving to the disclaimer, you look back at the systems that are within the department. Look at the internal audit unit, they're all the audit committees, at the end of the day, you know, on the notes there's nothing but there's a disclaimer. And how do you intend to capacitate the two, or to make sure that when appointing the audit committees, appoint people with skills, people have got capacity, people will be able to detect that something is going to go wrong, then they can be able to advise accordingly. Unused buildings. According to the department, what is best for you? Is it best to maintain, to keep on maintaining these unused buildings? Because to me, they're fruitless, you know, and wasteful expenditure than to dispose it. Which is best for you? So that at the end of the day, you know, you save where you're supposed to save rather than spending on the buildings that are not used. The last one. Is it not proper for you to identify all those used, unused buildings that are suitable to be used as offices, so that you circulate the list to the department, so that when they need the offices, they must just look at those lists, you know? And also, what plans are in place to make sure that, you know, there are penalties to those departments that, you know, when you advise them, they take their own route. At the end of the day, there are financial implications. Thanks,
Chairperson. Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Most of the questions have been asked. It's only that around the escalation of prices, what is in place so that we should not go about? We've got an example in the Northern Cape of two buildings. The hospital that has been built in Upington and the correctional services. Prices are just going up and up, and the project doesn't come to an end. It's getting that way. What is there any measures that have been taken that next time that we build or give a contract to a construction company, that it should stick to whatever it is said in the contract? And the second one, it's on the EPWP. We have also seen that
on the EPWP, can we reserve that when they make presentation on the EPWP? I will pack it up, we beg an e-presentation on the EPWP.
Okay, ma'am.
Thank you very much for the understanding.
Okay, thanks, Mama.
Did you? Khalil? Are you done?
Yes, let me leave the others.
Okay, did you? Can you respond?
thank you, Chairperson. Maybe starting with the last one, was with the escalation of prices. The escalation of prices, to manage that, honorable members, you need to have properly qualified quantities available. That's part of resourcing the core. Because we deal with infrastructure, we need engineers, we need quantity surveyors, we need architects, and et cetera, et cetera. That's just one part of dealing with that. You have to redirect your resources to get those people inside the department and not continue.
You are now discouraging me. I will give you a slot for follow-up, 10 minutes for follow-up. DG, can you respond according to Ilistiami? Because the first question to respond to is a question for Honorable Dreya.
I'm going to go back to the front.
Okay, ma'am.
And also the implementation of this infrastructure delivery improvement program has disappointed kids. And the program management unit, actually a treasurer, is using that to actually manage the planning and delivery of infrastructure. This is what now we're bringing on board. If you remember earlier, I said this was actually our toolkit that we just didn't use and continued using our own project planning tools. But the toolkit is there, and the toolkit has just been revised. In actual fact, I think it would be good that they come here and present it so that you can see the different streams. They revised the toolkit now, even talks. It has a procurement, and if I were to call it sub-kit as part of it. It just tells you step by step what to do when you go for procurement and all of that. But that could be done, Chaperson, so that at least we talk about something that all of us are clear of. On the issue of redundant and labor staff, and I concur with Honorable Dreyer that as part of the stabilization, sort of the list of experts, Honorable Member, we bring in an HR / legal person to deal with those issues of managing those processes going forward. HR would be one of those additional stabilization interventions to assist with human capital planning and make sure that we don't fall foul of the law when it comes to stuff that could be deemed as redundant. The issue of maladministration and corruption, it is for this reason, Honorable Member, that as part of the stabilization interventions, we also have to look at the issue of supply chain management. Once you tighten the controls around supply chain management, having quoted that figure of what you are adjudicating per month, you will deal with issues of maladministration within the department with regard to corruption. And I don't know, the other question from you was what to do with honest, now I've forgotten that you remind me about it. My notes here now are not very clear on that one. The other issue that you mentioned. The acting that was mentioned by Honorable Member Vitale, there is a solution to that, Honorable Member. In the DG's position, you can't appoint a DG when you have not resolved the case of the real DG, if I were to call him that. The minister is working behind the scenes to actually settle that case. That's all that I can say for now. Because now, it's a domino theory. It's a domino. The DG is acting because we have taken somebody now and put him or her in the acting position. The shifting of funds is unfortunate, Honorable Member, but there has been a tradition in the department that we have shifted funds. For example, some of the border posts, like Kelpadek, that are now also under SIU investigation, they started as far back as 2004. If you go back to our strategic plan, now you ask yourself, what are we doing in this Kelpadek that is not ending? We would shift money from Kelpadek, for example, we give it to Fios Drift, the other border post with Mutuan. So, but also due to also lack of delivery, we have shifted some funds to the IDT to assist us, rightfully so, within the legal framework, to implement the energy efficiency program, because Treasury picked up that we're not going to spend this much. Well, at least in the country, faced with load shedding. So the funds are shifted to the IDP to do that. But also we have shifted some client funds without adequate consultation, but we're aiming to correct that. I was just giving you an example of the positive and the negative of this shifting of funds.
DG, your staff are also offered cheese. You can also go for cheese.
Low welcome morale, and the mindset, as also the Honorable Member, it has to change. I agree with you fully, Honorable Member. We cannot ignore that, because once you ignore that, you will not have a successful intervention. Minister said before you, there are thousands of public works employees who come to work to serve their country and are honest. The figures that may be unearthed by this corruption would be attributed to a very few people in the department colluding with those who are outside and who have embraced the notion of corrupting public officials. But the majority of staff in the department, they come to work to do one thing, to serve the country. We have that. That's why, as one of the a list of experts that we are having, we need to have a change manager who will assist us to deal with those issues, so that, because they are very central to the success of this turnaround. The comparison between public works and private companies. Private companies, by their nature, are market-driven. Are profit-driven. And we are a government department. The comparison was just given so that you can see the reality of the fact that we are an asset manager of the state, but we are not adequately resourced in terms of those skills. We may have the big numbers, 4,300, but if you look at who can run the asset management business from the department, you'll find that we are lacking there. But we are also going to deal with that by making sure that we have a property expert who are going to be part of the expert team. On the issue of the EPWP and municipality, it's an unfortunate, because all our ministers have actually tried to intervene at the political level for the municipalities to actually operate optimally to support the EPWP. What we've been doing for years is to provide technical support to municipalities. But like I said probably earlier, you can go there and provide that technical support, produce the business plan and give it to you. But if the institution itself is not operating optimally, as soon as you walk back as an EPWP person from head office of public works, the project will still not be implemented, because the municipality is not in a state of in the right state of implementing the project. Some of these issues are really they need to be dealt with at the political level, but some of them are captured in the AGs and the treasury report on municipalities, what needs to be done to address that. I think the point for me was to say, probably the honorable members will also have to reflect on this and support the EPWP at the political level to succeed, because by making sure that the department who is probably responsible for municipalities is also supported to make sure that there is a turnaround of municipalities. Inner city regeneration, the precinct, the building of a construction of a precinct in the inner city, is confronting problems, yes, because some clients don't want to be there. But this is where also the tension comes in, and probably the truth will never be told fully. We say we're taking you to South Okop. That's government land. You say you have no, I don't want to go to South Okop. Then there are delays now in providing this accommodation to you, because now we're engaging now in unnecessary exchange. You say South Okop can accommodate 5 government departments. You say you don't want to go to South Okop.
That would say you cannot mention.
It's
a cabinet decision. And if it's a cabinet decision, the ministers are part of that decision. Now I want you to specifically say to us, who says he doesn't? Because even the DG sits in the cabinet. Who's refusing? Who has got power over cabinet?
Yes. As Chairperson, there are various departments that have refused over the years. But I also know that we are offering that site currently to correctional services.
and they've already identified their building, the building that they want to move in somewhere, I think it's Centurion. But also, we can also safely say, Chairperson, Statistics South Africa and another government department have agreed to go to Salvocorp, because Salvocorp should have been serviced a long time ago. It's actually not even right that Salvocorp is remaining empty, because government departments have refused to go to Salvocorp. So Salvocorp is just one of those sites which government departments can be moved into, but they don't want to necessarily locate there. They come with all sorts of stories, inaccessible, but it's just about probably not understanding that it's a cabinet decision that was taken a while back. And maybe because of the change of the of managers also in some government departments, maybe we have also not communicated this clearly that this is a binding decision. Projects and leases. One honorable member mentioned that how we're going to deal with all these challenges of projects if we have the same people in the same position. Honorable members, Minister said, government has a performance management system that does not get implemented. One of the ways in which we are going to be going ahead with this, I know it sounds probably we've said this before, but the mood now has changed. If you do not implement performance appraisal system informed by correct performance agreement, you're not going to win this one. The change of DGs has actually assisted managers in the department to actually play a cat and mouse game. Because while they are getting comfortable with the DG, then the DG is gone. Then another one comes in, spends time learning about the department. Then the performance agreement changes. Then the performance appraisers are not honored. So it's been that kind of a Mickey Mouse situation that has actually contributed to performance appraisers not being done properly. So it's very much linked to the change of changes that have happened in the DG's office mainly. The low morale of staff, I've spoken to that. The moving of people around, honorable member, that may happen as the stabilization efforts intensify. I've already said, for example, the asset register area has been taken away from the particular manager responsible for that, because the minister reflected that, how are you going to provide right data to this company that must do this thing quickly if you have not been able to detect that the kind of data emanating from that register is wrong, which means therefore that we could probably corrupt now the current intervention and make it produce an asset register that still has wrong data, and then we'll be here for the next 5 years repeating ourselves. It's also true that public works has been the major contributor to built environment skills in the country, especially in the big construction companies. We have tried to do that, especially because, if you recall, 2 years ago, I think one of the focus areas of the department was to recruit, following the economic meltdown, those companies that had relocated mainly to the Middle East. People were coming back because those companies were falling down because of the economic, global economic recession. And it's something that is part of this turnaround and human capital and planning, proper human capital planning, we have to have. Also, because of the scarcity of these skills, the honorable members must also know that when you recruit people with skills that are informed mainly by supply and demand, you also have to be prepared to pay, because the market economy is a capitalist economy. It's just supply and demand. They are in operation, and you just have to adhere to that. But we are now prioritizing the areas that are technical in the department. I also agree with the honorable member who says when we give contracts to these companies worth over a million or millions of rand, we have to make sure that our SCM, our supply chain, prescripts and enable those companies to take people in and undertake human resource development. We agree with that.
maybe one of the things that we need to look into, maybe this, our supply chain management guidelines, maybe generally in government, probably also have to be looked into to make sure that we effect that. But we can also do it at a departmental level, in exactly the same way we've done with the EPWP. The EPWP, through DORA, has actually been able to assist with that, at least with labor intensity, making sure that contractors or companies comply with labor intensive districts. Uminsa is also in touch with the unions. As a former union, unionist, he's in touch with the unions, but what he has made it clear to them, there are no unions that support corruption. So you can't say when I'm corrupt, then you go and tell you because I've been removed because of corruption. That cannot be tolerated. So there's continuous engagement, at least with the union, so that there's clear understanding around that part. You will be surprised of some of the things that have happened, in natural fact. Union members, some of them, and supporting some of the people that are being charged, being there and must provide support. As a country, we have to make choices whether we support corruption or we support the stable South Africa. Because I find it difficult to understand that union members will actually be following me when I'm going to a disciplinary hearing and I'm being charged for corruption. And the report is public. It's in the public space that we did ADCDE. What do you expect the minister to do? To say, I'm scared of the union and therefore I won't charge you. He has made that one very, very clear, actually, to the union in the department. We will honor the presentation of the property charter, honorable member Mbwane. We will hear from you when we should be doing that. The issue of performance appraisals, which was raised by the other honorable member around measurable objectives, we're paying attention to that. Hence, we have one of the experts, the monitoring and evaluation, and also the HR and legal specialist. The Balancing Act, honorable member, it has to, we have to, even if for now it may sound a trial, probably may, we may, it may sound a bit fluid, but the Balancing Act has to be engaged on, because you have to overhaul this list. You have no choice. Otherwise, every day you'll be managing a moving target. Every day you go to bed with new headlines. There's another one discovered, and I'm sure there's probably another one discovered as well, seated here. Now, you will not focus on the stabilization. You'll end up now chasing these individual misses and trying to find out. Fact of the matter is, there is no capability to manage these misses. And this is a matter that we identified as far back as 2005, that we're going to be in trouble with these misses. There's a document that we drafted in the department, a committee that I chaired. It's called the M State Document. We were trying to map out all of these problematic areas. But again, because of change of leadership, that document has never been implemented. Honorable Chair, I can circulate that document to you to share it with honorable members. It's a small document. We didn't want to make it thick so that people can read it quick. But if you go there, you will see that we had applied our minds on this, we had applied our minds on the PMTE, and we were just overtaken by the event of change of leadership in the department. Internal audit is one of the priority areas, honorable member, to be resourced adequately. In the previous years, it's true that it has relied on support from internal audit, external audit, but that creates a conflict of interest because we can't also be comfortable with audit companies. Audit companies have to audit in a clinical fashion, like the AG, and do their work, and not get themselves into a comfort zone with you as a client. So we are looking at resourcing that unit. It's just one of those oversight things that should never have happened. Unusable land, honorable member Nokobane, it will be probably that land that will be Dolomitic and not arable. Probably
unusable is a bit tricky, but it will be that type of land. And I also agree with you that it should be distributed to the needy. But I also want to assure you that yesterday I had a meeting with MKDA, and they are starting to liaise with many government departments in terms of their strategy on how to generate revenue from the veterans going forward. We can talk about that probably just outside this, but be mindful of the needs of MKDA and other people. I also want to acknowledge that the running team also in this question is how are you going to implement this with the same people? I have said earlier on that Minister has said if I were to go to probably the investigations on corruption are probably going to make other people leave. Tight performance management is going to make people probably think again. Remember that we have gotten away with murder for years. New DG every year. I've said to you that if I make an example about myself, who reported to the DG directly, I've served under a new DG every year. So if another one must come, I'm going to change my performance agreement and move the target. That's human nature. Then when I'm starting to be comfortable with this one, another one comes in. In fact, the joke I've shared with my friends is that I should actually be so wrinkled on my face, because every time there's a new teacher, I have to go and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm doing A, B, C, D, E, and you're not sure whether this person's going to last, you know, for a year or 3 months. But again, it's just been that. DPSA has a performance management system for government, but if it's not enforced, it's not going to work. But if there's a change, turnover of leadership, it's still not going to work, because it's human nature to push things and package them as new to a new DG coming in and does not understand public work. It's a complex business. One minister that I won't quote, for example, was in FNB Stadium before we handed that stadium to the city of Joburg only in 99 maybe. And the then DG said, Minister, the PA system is not working, to the minister. Just to illustrate the. And the minister said to the DG, what's the PA system of the stadium got to do with me? And the DG said, Minister, this is your stadium. So the minister said, this is my stadium. What stadium now got to do with me? That's the complexity of this business. Debt collection, monitoring of the strategy, how is it going to happen? The stabilization team, I want honorable members to leave you with this assurance that the stabilization team would be some kind of this filter that makes sure that all the deliverables that are coming from these branches are filtered to make sure that they are quality products. So that will be ongoing monitoring of all the deliverables. Debt collection. The honorable member said, how are we going to deal with the clients who say to pay. The challenge there is two-pronged. One, some clients do pay, but to find that we're clueless that they pay. Some clients don't pay because we force them to go to a building that they don't want. Or some clients said to us that we are occupying that building only to learn later, because there's no proper monitoring, that the clients actually never occupied that building and have gone to acquire another building on their own. At the core of this, if you go to our strategic plan, is the lack of submission or enforcement of the user asset management plan, which are related or are provided for in the government Immovable Asset Management Act. The user asset management plan, we've been supporting departments to actually develop them, so that departments, in terms of the PFMA, the accounting officers are responsible for what they are paying for. But you find that that process, also due to capacity issues in the department, has faltered. But it's something that we are looking into, because we have to submit those user asset management plans to
to National Treasury. So it can deal with some of these things because there will be proper planning for government buildings. On the issue of unused buildings, whether we dispose them or keep them, honorable members, it's a policy question, this one. And it's a policy question that the minister is engaging with, because at times when we come to parliament, we say we want to dispose this, and at times this has happened many a times before, not necessarily with you, but with probably former members. They will say you want to dispose of government properties. Why? So you're sitting there and you're saying, oh, okay, but some of them, you know, you can really dispose of them. But there's also a disposal policy that has never been approved, unfortunately, by the previous minister. Every time it's submitted, and then it's turned back with comments, and then the minister changes, and then we have another minister, and then we submit the disposal policy. It's there, but for now, we have focused on mainly, not exclusively, at least to dispose of buildings that are required by socially, for social needs, at least to other government departments like that, for human settlement, to dispose of buildings before to assist with to assist with housing. But it's a policy question that must be reflected on very seriously. Do we dispose? Why are we not getting Treasury to give us money to refurbish these buildings? We have quite a youthful population in this country that needs flats. They don't want to stay in the backyard of their parents. But they find that they can't afford, probably, because there's no, the current results are not in their favor. So we have a mushrooming informal settlement, you know, as backyard. So we can also look at all of those strategies to deal with our youthful population that needs accommodation and want to get out of their parents' homes. So the issue of to dispose or not to dispose is also an issue that honorable members can also reflect on or not. Chairperson, I don't know if I've left out any questions, but if it's looking, so that I can take a break, I'll hand over to him to answer that question on the EPWC. How is the department going to monitor the delivery of infrastructure, especially around?
We'll bring all those questions, EPWP questions, after their presentation. But DG, the unused land, I just want to make a follow-up. The unused land that you are referring to, is it not the dollar mine land that cannot be utilized for agriculture? Can you clarify on that one? And also, DG, I'm not convinced. The issue of who decides where the offices should be, that is an issue. And that should be a political issue, because I don't buy the response that you gave us to say who is that? If a cabinet, if we can honor cabinet decisions, who is to overrule cabinet decisions? And also the issue of morale. What are you doing? Because if the staff morale, the junior staff morale is so low, what are we doing about it? So that they can also get into the moving vehicle that is to be part of the turnaround strategy. Honorable Mazapa, you said you wanted a slot, a follow up. I'll give you 15 minutes to follow up. 1111 in short. Let us not go around the building exercising our voices. Mama Gala.
Chairperson, I think this year I'm answering about the inter-ministerial committee, because they are busy. Are they going to afford to do the extra work? Secondly, is it possible for the department to tabulate between the short-term and long-term issues? Thank
you. Did you? Michael?
No, it was I wanted to check.
It must be small.
It's not pregnant, Chair. I want to check with the acting DD whether this strategy has incorporated the State of the Nation address by the President. Because if you focus on service delivery, you must take into consideration also what has been raised during the 2018 financial year.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is with regard to the follow-up on the issue of the accommodation, because the mandate of the DPW is to give accommodation to the departments. But if departments, they decide to go outside of that mandate and go somewhere, who's going to pay for the building that they're going to be accommodated? Thank you.
Mine is just on the variation order, whereby your variation order exceeds the scope of work. Now, one understands that you said they are not supposed to do the department, but most of the work is outsourced.
Are you recording what you're...
So most of the time you are outsourcing your work and your consultants are doing your work as the scope of work. Now, it means then, because basically your variation cannot be 20% over your scope of work. For instance, like the present month in November scope of work, that was double the amount. Means that then you either not monitoring your consultants, and what are you doing about your consultants who are not doing their work properly? Because you cannot have variation orders that are double the price. They cannot be double the scope of work. Thank you.
My question is directed to the acting issue. It's about the NYF. Are you still continuing with the old, because we heard about it, but later on nothing happened. About utilizing the youth league, national youth service. On the renovation of the building. That was the main objective of having that NYS. Lastly, can you can answer this one, or can if you feel like. We remember when we complained about the internal.
We are in an official meeting. She must respond.
Because it's no longer mentioned, Chaplain. That's why I'm saying she can. If she can, she will. About the corruption in the department. Remember, you used to have that internal audit committee members. I remember the last time we had them, they had team chefs, and the person in charge of that used to be very, very proud of them, saying they are doing a very good job. And I remember there were. The culprits were held, and the cases were reported to the, I don't know what happened to that, were reported to the police, and after that we never had anything about anybody, whether they what happened to those. That's why I'm saying she can, if she can, but if she doesn't know anything about it, she.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is that one not for ineffective internal. What I want to check, Chair, is there any strategy that they are going to use to ensure that the internal auditing is working? Because if they can use that effectively, it can help the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you over to you?
Thank you, Honourable Members. On the issue of the IMC, it's a bit tricky for me to answer that because it's a ministerial engagement. But I think the Minister has met successfully with the Minister of Finance. And the Minister of Finance is a busy, busy person. But they find time to meet to discuss what needs to be done. So I would assume that having those ministers is important, because what the minister is trying to draw from them are the experiences from those ministers of how they've turned around their department. But if the minister can meet with the Minister of Finance, I think it's also equally possible to meet with the other ministers. But that's what I can say, but probably the question could be reserved for him, Honourable Member. But also the IMC, really, won't be involved in operations. It will provide strategic leadership and insight. So that's why the importance of this support team working is very, very important, because it will be focusing on the operational issues and the strategic project that the department has to implement. SONA considerations, the issues around SONA, yes, they are considered, because if the honorable member, or rather, I had mentioned that infrastructure, public works is going to play a central role in infrastructure delivery based on the SONA commitment that the president has communicated to the entire country. It is for this reason, honorable member, that I said there is a toolkit to plan and deliver infrastructure within the planning and budget cycle of government. We've just not been using it. Hence also these variation orders that continue to escalate. We are bringing in that group, the program management professionals who are based at the program management unit, to assist with the implementation of our building program. I hope you have seen our building program publication that we normally bring to Parliament, where all the projects that Public Works is implementing are captured. So I have requested through the Technical Assistance Unit of Treasury that the Program Management Unit come and take that building program and begin to plan and assist with the planning of projects. There will be those projects, obviously, that will probably be late to be doing that, because we are in the infrastructure business. And like I said before, if you are going to engage in maintenance, it's 1 year in advance, construction 2 years or more in advance, if it includes issues of site clearance. The ineffective and internal audit. I said earlier, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that internal audit is one of the units that is going to be prioritized to actually deal with the issues of capacity in the unit. The issue of contractors and the variation orders will escalate costs, deliberately escalate costs. There's a very clear policy decision by government to blackmail these companies. Therein, we fail. We just don't blackmail them. So that's something that we need to be paying attention to. But also the Minister of Finance alluded to the fact that he will be establishing this chief procurement officer for some of these major projects, so that the enforcement of that policy decision by government is implemented. The NYS, honorable member, and honorable Henderson next to me will deal with that when he's presenting the EPWP. And the issue of corruption and investigations, Minister has asked for a report from the internal audit unit of all investigations that they've undertaken. Again, this has been affected by the change of leadership. Because maybe when the support to the internal audit to finish those investigations, although it's affected by the capacity of the unit, but again, when they are probably ready to hand over this report, we have another accounting officer. Then they must again start a debrief that we are still doing these investigations. We need support to finish them, but we have not been able. So these are some of the issues that really will keep on happening in the department if we do not implement this turnaround. Chairperson, I don't know if I've left the other questions unanswered.
Thank you, DG. DG, Baba Makwandia, finally, we are moving to EPWP.
Oh, the land.
The land.
Chairperson, for example, I said some of it is dolomitic. If you look at Gauteng, 20% of Gauteng has dolomitic land, which means you can't build houses. Otherwise, your house would sink, like somewhere in Kutong, which was on TV years ago, if I were to illustrate what could happen when you build on dolomitic land. But you know that government, there's this entity, the Council of Geoscience, they are looking into those issues in consultation with the Department of Agriculture. to actually address that. So it would be interesting probably to find out what exactly is happening around that area. The cooperation of the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Agriculture. But the Geoscience Council is actually looking at that, honorable member. I think I'll leave it there.
Members, bear with me. I want a presentation on EPWP to be done, because that is critical. EPWP is critical to this meeting, and can you please, can I apologize that we're now moving to EPWP?
We have a 5 minute
break.
Can we have a 5 minute break, please?
5 minutes should be 5 minutes. It's 25 to 22 must be all here.
5 minutes is up.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm at your honor.
Yeah, go and make sure that you summarize so that you can be able to engage.
Yes. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have been requested to reflect specifically. We will talk about the broader economic issues, but we have been requested, according to your correspondence, to speak specifically to the post municipal summit engagements. That's what our letter said. But we are more than welcome to reflect on the incentive model too. But I just like to point out that you will see what our presentation focuses on the post municipal summit engagements. But as I said, we are more than happy to engage with you even on the review of the incentive model and whatever you may require. So our presentation in terms of the what we will cover here, we will just briefly touch on the theme of the summit and the purpose of the summit and the key discussions of the summit and then the post-summit developments. As honourable members would know, the Expand Public Works program is implemented across all three spheres of government, namely national, provincial, and at the local government level, and across four sectors, the infrastructure sector, social sector, the environment, culture sector, as well as the non-state sector where we engage with the not-for-profit organizations. So if we focus on this particular summit that was held in November 2011, there's particular significance for us because we have heard quite often that municipalities, they struggle with particular problems to implement the Expand Public Works program. They also struggle to draw down on the wage incentive. So there are particular challenges for this sphere of government. Our Chief Director for Partnership Support, C.J. Abrams, will deal with the presentation, she will make the presentation, and then we'll be more than happy to take questions.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. In terms of the theme and the purpose of the summit, the key theme was to accelerate towards the delivery of the 4.5 million work opportunities for the poor. Members will know that there are specific sphere targets for national, for provincial, and for municipal sphere. And together, the national and the municipal and the provincial sphere contribute over 70% of the 4.5 million work opportunities. This was the second summit. The first summit was held in 2010 in October, and it was held at Gallagher Estate. And as indicated, the aim was to ensure that job creation by municipalities reached the 4.5 million. A key reason why we needed to have the summit is to impress upon municipalities that the targets in the
last 3 years of the EPWP increased dramatically. So it was very important for us to be able to emphasize the achievement of that 4.5 million work opportunity. Now, the content of the municipal summit, we were very mindful of the fact that we had new political principles that were elected in office in 2011. And so the key part of the summit was to ensure that we import technical knowledge and an understanding of EPWP phase two. Secondly, we also then considered the resolutions of the 2010 summit resolution. And then we also looked at key policy principles in terms of the EPWP. And key over there was the incentive and the review of the incentive. We looked at best practice, and we increasingly find that municipalities continually want to know what is another municipality doing, how are they addressing challenges. And so it's important for us to be able to look at appropriate institutions in which best practice is shared. And then it's also garnering the support of political principals and technical staff in terms of the phase two target. Now, what were the key issues that were discussed at the summit? You will find that I've underlined the key issues. So the first issue that was noted was that there is an increased number of reporting municipalities, and I think that's something we are very happy about as Public Works. But in the same breath, in terms of being happy with it, we are very worried that at the same time that the targets or the number of work opportunities being reported per municipality is not at its optimal. And that is where the focus is currently. So you will also see later in the presentation that the number of reporting bodies have moved from 142 municipalities in 2019 to 217 in 2011. And we saw a marked increase after the summit, the first summit we held. After this summit, we also saw another remarkable increase whereby it's moved from 217 to 244 municipalities. But note the point, which is the second bullet point, there continues to be under-reporting. It's under-reporting in the sense that there are 43 municipalities that have not reported in any sector on the EPWP to date. Under-reporting in the sense that there are projects, because we also look at league registered projects, and we then compare it to the projects that are reported on the EPWP, and we then note that there is under-reporting with regard to that. If one then looks at there's not identified suitably trained officials to implement EPWP, there's high rotation of staff within the municipalities, and it's a constant issue. Currently, at the Public Works Department, we are looking at an EPWP learning framework in which we are then training. We would want to train EPWP or staff on EPWP issues. What is the EPWP? Why was the EPWP introduced? Why labor intensity? Looking at best practice. And we envisage that that will start rolling out as from the next financial year. In terms of the next issue, which is not underlined but bolded, it is to expand and continue the provision of technical assistance. Municipalities require assistance, yeah. Particularly when one deals with contract documentation, it's the inclusion of the labor intensity principles. It's the monitoring of the labor intensity. The key issue that was brought out here by our international speaker is that if you apply labor intensity techniques, you are able to get between 3 to 5 times more employment. Then you find that the chairperson of the portfolio committee has indicated that there needs to be increased focus on attaining the full-time equivalents. That is a challenge. You will see it from the data. We are not reaching our full-time equivalent. The EPWP, in terms of target, at least aim to ensure that we achieve 100 days of employment per annum. And then at the municipal sphere, you will note that the social sector, very poor reporting at that sphere. Only 12 municipalities reported in 2011. Post the summit, the number has increased. I'm speaking under correction, it could be 22 or 23 municipalities that reported after the municipal summit. In terms of the resolutions of the summit noted, but let me take you back to the 2010 resolutions. One of the 2010 resolutions were that we would sign protocol agreements. these protocol agreements are signed between the Minister of Public Works, the MEC, the Premier, and then the Mayor of the municipality. It indicates that the Minister of Public Works will take leadership at a national sphere. The Premier will take leadership with the MECs at a provincial sphere. And then the Mayor will take leadership for the EPWP at a municipal sphere. And that all of the signatories will appoint staff or champions within their specific domains that would lead the EPWP. They would then be looking at aspects such as ensuring that all EPWP sectors are being reported on, that the incentive gets drawn down, and more critically that the EPWP is included in the performance agreements of all staff. So it includes a number of issues. It also includes the institutional arrangements. So what the summit noted at the time was that at the time of the summit, which was the 1st of November, there were 238 agreements that were signed out of 278. And so the summit for 2011 then said, well, we note your progress, but we would like you to finalize this process and ensure that the agreement is in place. And the target deadline that we then received was that we would have these agreements all signed by the 31st of March. I do have a slide later in the presentation which clearly indicates which municipalities have not signed to date and in which we are then engaging with over the next period. The next thing, and this was a new component in terms of the summit, we then said we've got the protocol agreements. What sometimes happens is that you've got the agreement and we want it to be a living document because there was a number of questions post the summit. So the document is signed, what now? And it is some process that we are then engaging with. It's the constant eating of the apple. The next thing we thought that needs to be done is the EPWP policy. So it is the question of, yes, you've got targets because the protocols contain targets per sphere, per municipality. How are you going to achieve that? How does it link to the IDPs? Who in the municipality is responsible for the EPWP? So when you come to a municipality, the first question you would ask is, can we look at the policy? And then look at performance in accordance with the policy. As national, we've looked at a few policies because there have been a few policies that have been developed to date, and we've developed now a draft template in which municipalities can utilize this, but they can incorporate factors such as what is the unemployment within your local municipality, what is the income distribution in terms of your local municipality, what are certain policies that are there in your municipality that foster for job creation? What are the key sectors in your municipality that can assist with the EPWP? So that document has been developed and it has been consulted with all provinces. Certain provinces such as KZN has now moved out to be able to ensure that the policy gets workshopped with various municipalities. The next component is the inclusion of the EPWP in the IDPs. This is a very critical process because if it is not included in the IDPs, then it's not included in the planning. And so it's an important process that we're embarking, and this is very much tied to the incentive process, the review of the incentive. The next thing is to optimize budgets. If we optimize budgets and we use labor-intensive techniques, we are able to achieve the 3 to 5 times more employment on the EPWP. The critical part, and at the summit what we showed was that if there are district steering committees, now maybe we should take a step back. In terms of the EPWP, what we have is we've got structures at national that bring all sectors together and all spheres together. That is the National Coordinating Committee, which the DDG is in charge. At the provincial level, we have provincial steering committees in which all sectors sit, and then and municipalities, to review the progress at the provincial level. At the district steering committee level, that is the part that we are focusing on now. What we are saying is that it is unfair to expect a municipality to perform if there is not a structure where they can consistently come and bring and raise various issues. Because very often you find that there's one or two people in the municipality that is supposed to be implementing EPWP. And my key question is, imagine I'm sitting in Mzumbubu and there's nobody else around me. I'm told to do EPWP. Where do I go? Who do I ask? Besides the fact that there is technical assistance. So we find that it's important that we establish these district forums, and we were very happy as national when these district forums were made a summit resolution. At the summit, what we showed was that provinces that have district steering forums are able to deliver much more. Eastern Cape has a district steering forum, Western Cape has fully functional district steering forums in all districts, and I will note the progress in other provinces. Northern Cape recently established district steering forums, but these steering forums are still in the inception phase. Key is to establish best practice, because at the summit the key question was, how do other municipalities do it? What are the challenges that they are faced with? How do we pay workers? Compliance issues to the ministerial. So best practice is very important. Technical support, you'll find that EPWP as national has always been providing support, but we are very happy that provinces are starting to hold our hands. The Eastern Cape province has got technical support that they provide as the provincial sphere to municipalities and provincial departments, which then go hand in hand, and we then coordinate it with National Department of Public Works technical assistance. The Northern Cape is currently finalizing a tender at the moment in terms of technical support. KwaZulu-Natal province is also currently doing that. They are actually using the incentive funds to be able to provide technical support. And then a key part of the summit was the review of the integrated incentive models. That took up a lot of discussion. Key issues over there were that municipalities felt that they don't have sufficient startup funding to be able to fund projects that could then later be EPWP projects. Key component here was to strengthen the relationship between NPOs and municipalities. It is a model that is increasingly being implemented. You will know that it's one of the four sectors of the EPWP. There has been extra funds that have been allocated in terms of the budget of this year, in terms of NPOs, and we find that that is a quick expansion possibility, which would then allow every municipality to be able to participate. Some results and emphasize the implementation of EPWP in municipalities and the use of labor-intensive techniques, and that we need to intensify our reporting. I don't have a challenges slide, but this is one of our biggest challenges, and it is something we leave the district steering forums to concentrate on. Is EPWP being applied per project? Why is it not being applied? We've seen a school going up, but we haven't really seen it being reported on the EPWP. Why not? It's those questions we ask at these district steering forums. And then implementation manuals are also critical. The post-summit engagement. These are my last two slides. We have the conclusion. 26 municipalities have signed since November, and increasingly it is the KZN that has managed to move. This is the slide. I want to take you then slowly through it in terms of the progress. When you look at the slide, it's 238, and I want to move my mouse. I can't move my mouse. It's the second column, which is 238. That was the progress before the summit. You will find that there are certain provinces that are amazing when it comes to intergovernmental relations. The Limpopo and Mpumalanga provinces are always first up in the starting block. When it comes to signing of incentive agreements, protocol agreements, anything, they are very quick. The relationship is sound there from a signing perspective. You will note that the key problem was KwaZulu-Natal province. The most municipalities, 61 municipalities, only 34 at the time of the summit signed. So when we move to the next slide, we've moved now from an 86% signing to 95% of our municipalities have signed to date. It is the protocol agreement that was mentioned earlier that defines the leadership role of municipalities and the targets in terms of per municipality. I decided to list the municipalities that have not signed. You will find it in the right hand column, honorable members. What has happened since November is that there has been road shows, and I think this is what we want to see. There's been road shows between the office of the Premier, the COCTA in KwaZulu-Natal, the Department of Transport as the lead coordinating department, and Public Works as our regional office, to ensure that now we've moved to only 12 agreements outstanding. And we met with them last week, kept on asking, will it be signed, will it be signed, will it be signed? I'm confident that most of it will be signed by our deadline of the 31st of March, except West Coast District Municipality. And they've simply said to us, we don't have a budget. We used to have a budget. We don't have a budget anymore. And it's our local municipalities that have budgets. And even though we've given them a very minimal target, as we've given to the districts, they have refused to sign. And there has been one-on-one engagement. Now, in terms of the municipal performance, what will be noted in terms of, let me refer to the specific slides over here. It is slide 17, slide 18, and slide 19 of the pack. It's meant to just indicate, you know, what has been the performance. And I think we don't have to go through this because there's tables that summarize it a bit better later. But this will just give detailed performance per municipality in terms of the various sectors. One will then also note what was mentioned in terms of the social sector, that it's not being reported in all of the provinces. Most notably, I think, if one looks at slide 17 and 18, one will see that the environment and culture sector has moved from certain provinces not reporting to all provinces reporting in terms of at the municipal sphere, in terms of the environment and culture sector. To be noted, and I went to environment and culture sector meeting last week, the environment and culture sector is actually starting to perform in the third quarter better than the infrastructure. It is the one area where there's a lot of possibilities within the expanded public works program. So I will be moving then to the slide which says Eastern Cape Province, which is slide 20. What we've done here is we've broken it down per province because one needs to be able to understand what are the issues per province. Now, in the Eastern Cape, there's a bit of a time series analysis that was done. To be able to say, in the first year, we had 23 municipalities report only. 2010-11 was an important year because this was the year we established district steering committees. And those committees were established by the Department of Public, the Department of Roads and Public Works within the province, going to all municipalities, engaging the municipalities on a level to be able to get that buy-in. Do you want the district steering committees? What is the purpose of the district steering committees? Now, essentially these district steering committees, and I haven't given a bit of a background over them, district steering committees should happen on a monthly basis. At the district steering committee, the district can chair. But you do have challenges where some districts say, I don't want the district to chair. And so we allow them to be able to undertake that discretion. So it could be the local municipality that decides to chair, or it could even be the coordinating province that decides to chair. National Department of Public Works also provides assistance. But at that district steering committee, it is very critical that you then say to a municipality, this is how you've performed. So this slide will typically be shown at the district steering committee to be able to say, municipality, what has happened? If you look at the last two columns of this table, 2009-10, there was only 58% achieved to date, 42% FTEs. Municipalities, we are worried. You are reporting work opportunities, but your duration is not 100 days. How are you designing your projects? Then we will say to the Eastern Cape, we've seen a number of municipalities have improved in terms of reporting. It's moved up from 23 to 42. And that's because of the district steering committee, which explains things, which is, if I look at one municipality, this municipality reported on water and sanitation, reported on this, reported on that. and then municipalities start to understand, oh, is that what we are supposed to be reporting? Is that how we're supposed to be undertaking EPWP? Then they share in terms of contracts. How does contracts look? Can I get your contract? And then, for example, what also then happens in these district steering committees, and it is critical that we provide the feedback, municipalities become despondent with public works when we don't get feedback about non-compliance. Because the municipalities will sometimes say, I've got a total of 1,000, but US Public Works said to me, I only created 500 work opportunities. So these district steering committees are very critical to say to a municipality, the reason why the project was not included was because wages was more than the total budget. There's only, for example, 62, 63 working days in a quarter. But as a municipality, you had 90 working days. That can't be possible. So these district steering committees are very critical to provide that feedback to a municipality. Critical issue here with the Eastern Cape is that we are very happy. All municipalities are reporting. So everybody is in the fold. Everybody understands EPWP. The worry is the FTEs. At 47%, it is debatable to say, are you applying your labor intensity guidelines to the projects? Because the projects need to be 100 days. Next, the key issue is, if you look at how they've moved increasingly well on the work opportunities. They're now 81% of their third-year target. So the key question is not whether they're going to reach the target. We think they will be reaching it, given the progress they've seen. It's the FTE focus that we need to have now. And critical over here, COCTA is working very closely. So at these district steering committees, they have NIC-registered projects. And the key question that gets asked is, why isn't this project being deported? The Free State province has moved from 10 municipalities in 2019 to 22 to 23. I think that's also quite commendable. But the key problem that we have is the work opportunities that are reported are very low. What will be noted is when one looks at the performance of the Free State, they've managed to draw down on the incentive quite well because the duration of the work opportunities seems to be improving. You will see there's almost a match between work opportunities and FTEs. If you look at 2010-11, 45% work opportunities, 46% FTEs. So the FTEs are of 100-day duration. The problem is the work opportunities, there's extreme underreporting there. What has happened over there is that they don't have district steering committees. Now, we've been pushing them, and they've not bought into the idea fully of district steering committees. At our meeting last week, they asked us, we're still busy looking at sustainability issues in terms of district steering committees. Because they say they've had district steering committees before, but these weren't sustainable. And our point is just, we've given you the agenda that must be covered. It's important that you provide this feedback to the municipality. What has been happening now is that there's been constant feedback to municipal managers, which is an important part because then you are not relying on officials within the municipality to only report to the MM. What is then happening is that EPWP, regional staff, is then reporting to the municipal managers. And there's been an improvement. The difference between quarter two and quarter three has been drastic, but it remains a worry for us. Gauteng province has 12 municipalities, and 10 are currently reporting. Our biggest worry over there is the metros. We will be engaging with the metros one-on-one. The only metro that managed to access the incentive was City of Joburg. City of Ekurhuleni, City of Tshwane have not managed to meet the FTE threshold. Okay, and that is a key worry. So we are already engaging municipalities, and how we plan to do it, that's one challenge we have. How we plan to do it is there's the Cities Network meeting that will be held on the 7th of March, in which we will then be addressing these issues. But we will also be going to the municipalities to engage both the political principals and also the officials in terms of what's being reported. At Gauteng, they managed still, despite these issues, they managed still to achieve the 3-year targets. KwaZulu-Natal province, this is where most of our concerns lie. Only 41 out of our 61 municipalities are currently reporting. There is the partnership that I've mentioned, and we are very encouraged by that. but reporting continues to be low. The key problem is that there are 10 districts, so the province is huge and it's difficult. Also, the Department of Transport doesn't have sufficient capacity, and there's a moratorium on staff in terms of the KwaZulu-Natal area. KwaZulu-Natal, as a province, is performing well at the provincial level because of the Zimbabwe program, but at the municipal sphere, there needs to be a lot of improvement. Also a concern is Etiquette Municipality. They've also not managed to access the incentive. Limpopo Province, 29 out of 30 municipalities are currently reporting. The key issue over here is that the number of work opportunities being reported is low. Currently, municipalities are finding that there's a problem in terms of budgets, and this has been communicated to us when we ask the province why aren't they achieving their targets to date. In terms of the Mpumalanga province, they've improved a lot over the third quarter. All their municipalities are currently reporting, and they're standing currently at 42% of the target. What will be noted is they've moved from 29% of their work opportunity target in year one. In year two, there was an improvement of 43%. In year three, it seems as if things are starting to click, because even at the third quarter, they have 49% of their target. So I'm very hopeful that the Mpumalanga province will start to pick up as we move forward. In terms of the Northern Cape, I looked at the third quarter data, and I think the most negative was the fact that there was a low drawdown on the Northern Cape in terms of municipalities. Municipalities are, in terms of, if you look at how they ended at 2010-11, they did fairly well. This year, there will be further roadshows, particularly because of the district steering committees that have been sent. In terms of the Northwest Province, I will be going tomorrow to the Northwest Province. There are challenges, and it's about ensuring that we address them. Only 19 out of the 23 municipalities have reported, and they've only achieved 37% of the three-year target. Western Cape, what's been happening with the Western Cape is the provincial coordinating department has focused a lot on the municipalities, because provincial departments in the Western Cape are not doing well in terms of EPWP. This is another example of district steering committees, and this is the point I'm wanting to make. Eastern Cape has a district steering committee, they are achieving their targets. Western Cape has exceeded their targets, and they've got district steering committees. They've in fact got a yearly calendar. I know, and we can forward this to the portfolio committee, which indicates when the district steering committees sit on a monthly basis. They've managed to achieve 128% of their three-year target. So it's going very well at the municipal level in the Western Cape. Overall summary, we're happy about the 244 municipalities. There is currently about 34 municipalities that have not reported. Many of them are in the KZN area. So for example, there's no correlation, and I've looked for the correlation between the protocol agreement signed and also the municipality that's not reporting. I think the only municipality that has not signed the protocol and that's also not reporting is Ugu Municipality. The rest we need to be able to find out. But if you sign the protocol, why aren't you reporting? It's for us a strange issue, and it requires one-on-one engagement. 72% of our target has been achieved to date. The performance has been increasingly well, and there are certain provinces that are pulling out the provinces by focusing on the provinces that are not meeting their targets. Conclusions, last two slides. The generic policy guidelines have been drafted, consulted with provinces, and now we will release it as from March. Those are the municipalities that have an EPWP-approved municipal policy. There's data capturing support at the regional level, and I have then highlighted how many data capturers per province. Please excuse me for the abbreviations, Eastern Cape Free State Gauteng. Since the municipal summit, there has been the establishment of the district steering committee. We would like a bigger drive towards this, particularly when the portfolio committee visits the provinces to be able to push them, because for me the progress is too slow. If we don't have these district steering committees, we cannot expect municipalities to perform. It is very difficult. You can't expect somebody to perform if you're not giving them feedback, if you are not being able to have best practice being shared. It's very difficult. So Elanzeni has moved, Elanzeni. Sisonke district has also established, Bojanala district has established a district steering committee, and then Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Northern Cape have all district steering committees in all districts, and all other provinces are in the planning phase. Those are the case studies that have been developed since the summit. And then key is that the integrated incentive model has been reviewed and finalized. And another important point, if we want municipalities to be able to deliver, it is providing technical support to municipalities. So for this financial year, we have 967 that have been trained on labor-intensive techniques, and 161 municipal staff have been trained on NQF7 in terms of labor-intensive techniques. And then a very important thing is, if the incentive in terms of the review is to be implemented as what we thought and successfully, because critical part is that 40% will be given up front to municipalities. The minimum allocation that municipalities can get is a 1 million allocation if municipalities are eligible. And critical with that is the pairing with technical support. So Public Works is actually sitting today to adjudicate the tender in terms of the technical support that will be provided and will be augmented with municipalities. But also note, we've got regional staff that are infrastructure specialists and specialists in all sectors that are at the regional level that are there to be able to assist municipalities. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you, CG. Honourable members, we have got 25 minutes to engage with the presentation. Who's to Ngwenya Mabila? Tole?
Thank you, Chairperson. Three questions. I'm happy that the issue of the incentive is being reviewed, because it was quite a challenge. There was no uniformity, and also the rural municipalities, which are unable to generate the revenue, were not benefiting from this program. But Chair, I think the other issue that you have to check, although there's a the progress with regards to reporting, but you know, the experience and also through the oversight that we've made, there was an indication that some of these projects, they don't comply to EPWP. In other projects, they're saying this is EPWP, but there's no skills transfer. In other projects, they will say this is EPWP, but it's not labor intensive. I think those are the issues that need to be taken into consideration. That really, if we talk about EPWP, it's EPWP, nothing else. It must not be westernized. Then the other one, who's going to monitor the implementation of this resolution? I understand that you have got this district forum. And also that you have trained some officials from the municipality. But the experience has indicated to us that in almost all the municipalities, there's no dedicated official for EPWP. EPWP is just everyone's business. Today it's my business, tomorrow it's November's business, the other day it's someone else's business. Then whom were you training? Because there's no dedicated person that will be accountable if there are no reports that have been submitted. Then the last one, the issue of the gender, you know, in this EPWP project, not taken into affirmative action, issue of people with disability, issue of women. It seems as if this EPWP is just a men's choir or whatsoever, men's work, because, you know, they will just say to you, women can't do this, but in other areas we'll find that women can build, women can plaster. Women can just put paving. So I think those are the issues that we have to monitor, because if we pass the laws must be implemented. Thank you. On the issue of the KZN, I'm confused there. They have said there's one municipality that did not sign because they said they don't have the MIG fund, the West Coast. But when on page 14, slide 28,
we are saying that there are 30 municipalities, and the 30 municipalities are reporting. What is it that they are reporting if they don't do anything?
Honorable Chole.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is only one question. Chair, on the agreement signed by the municipalities, it shows that some municipalities are not complying with the law. But what I want to find out, especially in Gauteng, they say the city of Johannesburg is not, there is not signed by the city of Johannesburg. Actually, what is the reason? What are they saying? Why are they not signing? Because in Gauteng, the city of Johannesburg is the biggest city. And that, the last one, Chair, is that one of city of Ekurhuleni and city of Tshwane, which are not met with the FTE. What is happening? Thank you.
No money.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is about the data capture. Although the presenter said there are kids, when I found that there were kids, nine, but that's neither here nor there. What are these data capturers doing actually? Because we're told that, during their presentation, the last one, we're told that these data capturers, they assist in capturing the data. But when we went to the municipalities, we're told that these people sit in the offices and phone the municipalities to say, how many people have we employed? They are not hands-on. That was our concern as the portfolio committee. Coupled with that, the presenter has just said there is technical support. If maybe you can unpack that to how did you do it? How is it assisting the municipalities? If there are still municipalities that do not report. And lastly, it's about the monitoring of the project. We appreciate the fact that, especially the Minister came from there, and then the portfolio committee, we saw for ourselves what was presented in the boardroom was excellent, but when it came to the actual project we went to, it was not there. There was nothing. So I'm saying we could hide ourselves by saying, no, everything is okay, yeah. But who does the actual monitoring? Because like the colleague just said, in some projects we were told that there are so many people who were employed, only to find that it's not like that at all. what is actually happening at ground level is not what is being reported to the department.
Honorable Gayla, and then you'll be followed by Honorable Swate, and then Uma November, you bring in the question, the earlier question.
No, Chairperson, unfortunately, yes. I haven't got a full document yet, so I think listening and taking notes. But anyway, the Chairperson, what is very important here, one hopes after the summit teach things will be much better, is the monitoring. That is a bottom line. Let us just be fair and open. We've visited a lot of projects, and the monitoring is just not there. Some of these projects are registered, but when you get there, the monitoring is not there to teach. And DG, some of these projects are in our constituencies. And you get there after we've left, nothing is happening. You know? So one thought that your district office could do the monitoring, because you have these EPW officials there, you know, but that does not seem to be happening. So that is the critical one here, that the monitoring of those projects is very, very, very important. And then secondly, is the issue of the labor-intensive projects like roads and so, a technical assistance, which also does not exist.
one hopes it will exist now. Where you find the chairperson and engage with the professionals that they want to do this work, but they don't get any assistance to, in fact, have drawings that are designed so that these projects can be labeled cancer. So that is, that's one point, that's one area that is lacking that you need to work on, you know, because these inspectors are not assistants, then it's just a waste of time. So those are the two issues that one needs to improve on. If the monitor does not exist, let us be open and clear, then the technical assistance, so if you can improve on those, it will be much better.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would just add on what Oliver Haler has just said with regard to monitoring. And I also want to add or ask another question on top of that with regard to where I'm coming from in my hometown. There is a project of expanded public works program. But similarly, I've also had the very same problem in Northwest. People were saying that they've been involved in the program, in the project, but they were not paid. And then this thing is still persisting, and people are sent to from pillar to post. Some of them, they even went to local public works offices to ask who actually is actually in charge of monitoring the whole project. So I just want to find out exactly, because some of the people are saying that there are some people who are actually running that on behalf of the government. So I need to be clarified on that one so as to understand exactly what is happening, because it seems here you're talking of district forums, and then I don't know what role is this district forum is actually doing in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lavema.
Chairperson, thank you. Let me not repeat what has been said by other members. But also in addition to monitoring is the disjuncture that one is observing. Because the national portfolio would go to a province just to find out that in some provinces, I'll take it from my own province, when we were there, there were no portfolio committee members. So who's monitoring who? It can even go down to the district. Who's monitoring who? Because the district might have six municipalities under it, but there's nobody to monitor. That's only that disjuncture that's a little bit worrisome.
Are you referring to provincial?
Yes.
Okay.
I will
I fully agree with the members. That was something that we picked up from the portfolio committee in the Free State. Currently, monitoring and oversight is included in the performance agreement of all NDPW regional staff. We are there required to show us evidence of visiting projects. We have agreed that this needs to be improved because our key worry is if the portfolio committee is finding issues that are of concern, why aren't these same issues being reported? So we've already agreed that as from April 2012, we will be working on increased oversight visits and monitoring for two projects. We have done it, and what we use is we've got a template that looks at progress to date in terms of the projects. Our M&E section tends to lead that. It is a visits that are determined by the number of projects. It is not based on good projects only. So the M&E then determines which projects would be visited. So I think I'm in full agreement that it is something that we can increase on, and we will commit to increase our oversight visits. We can even commit to providing a report post our visits. In fact, we did produce a booklet last year on all the project visits that were undertaken, and it is something that we can also share with the portfolio committee. It indicates very clearly where there was non-compliance to the ministerial determination in terms of wages, even UIF. So that is something that we can share with members. I think the key issue is, are we visiting a sizable number of projects? And then the next question is, where does one address these issues? And the key issue then would be, from the NCC, where does problems go to in terms of whether there's non-compliance in terms of projects. So we will get back to the portfolio committee on the projects that have been undertaken to date, and we will forward the publication that was developed, and we will provide a schedule of oversight visits that will be done as from April to the portfolio committee. In terms of who implements, who monitors the implementation of the resolution, it is my office that monitors that aggressively. We've got a session with all provinces, and this is a standing forum. It is called the Extended Partnership Support Committee. And in fact, we've now agreed that next month we'll be coming to the Western Cape. They'll be hosting us for 2 days. The key question that we keep on asking provinces is, explain to me, program management, if somebody asks me how do you program manage an EPWP, okay, different methodologies. So now we've said we've developed an institutional arrangements document for EPWP. What we want provinces to do next month is give us their case studies. Why are certain provinces performing better than others? How do you do the monitoring? So the idea is to be able to document that so that we ensure that systems are in place so that the resolutions are met, to be able to encourage best practice. So if we find that it's not done, in other words, the management of the signing of the IDPs or program management principles are in place, then it's a concern for us. So we'll be looking at it as extended partnership support. In terms of the district steering committees, they do help in identifying dedicated staff that are responsible for the EPWP. That's why we're increasingly pushing for the district steering committees. Certain provinces have come out to us, Gauteng has said to us, we will not establish district steering committees. There's only 12 municipalities, you can't expect that from us. Okay? Other municipalities are telling us we've got other forums, IGR forums. Our key issue is that we've gone to these forums and we are sometimes given one sentence to say we're announcing this. It is not an interrogation as we want. So if we find that the district steering committees are happening, there's a dedicated official that comes to report, then on a monthly basis, and then takes ownership of the EPWP. Sorry, my computer just... In terms of the EPWP designated groups, we are meeting
our women targets in terms of EPWP. But I think it is a continued problem, particularly if you go and monitor certain projects, specifically in the rural areas. It is something that we would want to increase focus on. In terms of strategic Johannesburg that has not signed, they have indicated that they were not happy with the targets because they had a slightly different target to what we had. The issue was resolved, and they've agreed that they will be signing. That's why I didn't mention them as not being able to reach the 31st of March. In terms of what is happening, I think that is our key issue that we are asking the cities. We want to ask all the cities this question. You've received incentive money. Now, if we don't see a sizable movement in terms of the FTEs created on an annual basis, what are you using your incentive money for? And that is a key issue that, for example, we are even wanting to engage with the city of Itakwini, because the city of Itakwini has decided to spend the incentive on agricultural projects. And the key question is, this money supposed to be used on labor-intensive techniques, labor-intensive projects? So that is the key question that we will be asking the cities. How are you applying it? Because there are audits that look at how they apply it.
But city, who's to be blamed if they are using it on agriculture? You are to be blamed. Because I checked the DDG of EPWP to be a specialist. And why are this sending? Why is this happening? Because I take it to be a specialist on EPWP, and I'm not expecting you to come and report to us to say they are using incentive grants for agriculture, because I don't take it. When we were on oversight visit recently, we were followed by a string of cars. People who wanted to go and make claims, because there are certain kilometers that they must drive when you are given a state car. But when we are not there, DG, when we are not there, these cars don't go and do oversight. That's the problem that we're having. I will not blame the municipalities. I will blame specialists that are in the department. Specialists that don't want to go out of their conditions offices to go and sweat out there, to go and check if really money that is allocated to the provinces is used for the purpose intended. So, CG, that one I don't take it. Mr. Anderson, we are not monitoring.
In terms of data capturers, we've got a data capturing process which then says that municipalities are able to provide data in a simplified format, and we as the department is able to capture data as required. In provinces, we also deploy data capturers to a municipality, so sometimes you will find that if there's a meeting within a municipality, or when the municipality requests, we are able to go through to municipalities to be able to capture data at the source in terms of municipalities. But the key question is, at the project level, it is the requirement of, so for example, I appoint a consultant. And as a consultant, in terms of the contract, is supposed to provide me with data in terms of local employment. That is included in the infrastructure contract. So it's about taking that particular data that the consultant has given and ensuring that it's reported into the EPWP, and that's the responsibility of our data capturers. So we will be dealing with the secondary data. The primary data will be dealt with by the consultant. If we look at technical support and how do we provide technical support, in terms of technical support, we started by assisting public bodies to identify suitable EPWP projects and programs. Assist public bodies to develop the plans to meet the target. So we then look at the project. We say to ourselves, how many work opportunities can this particular deliver if you apply EPWP techniques? And then ensure that the existing planning mechanisms such as the IDP and the EPWP and MIG are aligned. Then we look at the design of the project, assisting public bodies to design the project in a labor-intensive technique. What we were happy about is that the Eastern Cape actually developed contract documentation, which they then were able to share with all municipalities, which is a standard pack that allows municipalities to then just make it their own, depending on the project that is happening. the letter that gets given to the contractor or the consultant, the documentation in terms of the contract, how it's laid out, the reporting components, all of that. They then also look at advising on contract documentation details and alignment of the procurement process, and then the implementation part, which is the review of progress of public bodies, looking at the reporting part, where we look at what was included in the contract document and what was actually reported. As mentioned, Public Works is currently putting out a tender. We used to have a tender. We never had a tender last year for the technical support to be provided by municipalities. This technical support was provided through our staff at DPW in terms of the infrastructure specialists that were appointed, and then also it is through the provinces in terms of the technical support. But as mentioned, it is very critical for the incentive that all of these functions in terms of the technical support, as mentioned, would be actionable, because otherwise the incentive wouldn't work as intended. In terms of need to insist with the with labor intensity and drawings and things like that, that's the intention of the technical support. That's what it's meant to be. In Eastern Cape, I do concur with the increased monitoring that has to happen. The Eastern Cape has constantly mentioned to us that the projects do exist, they did exist. I think for us the bottom line is we need to increase monitoring. It's not about defending yourself, it's about saying, you know, what can we learn from this? Are we fully on board? Can we say that we've gone to provide oversight to a significant portion of our project? That's the point. It's not a whether it's there or not. It's the point. Increase your monitoring. What did district do at the project level? All projects get discussed at the district level. Every project that is reported gets discussed at the district steering committee. And 3 out of 9 provinces is not doing well in terms of district steering forums. So that's why we want to put a lot of emphasis there. Strengthen the partnership with our political principles. Our key question to provinces last week is, what happens with your provincial steering committee minutes? Where do these documents go? You know, if you've got a challenge in a certain province, who do you send it to? So that is a big question with us. We say, as Public Works, our role is to ensure that whatever comes to our attention through our oversight visits or through any other engagements needs to be brought through to our HOD forum. But where do provinces take it to? And are these issues being dealt with? So I do totally concur with the strengthening of the political relationship and the administrative part. I'm not sure I've covered my... Okay. Didi-ji?
I will answer this question. Thank you, Chair, honourable members. The question of when the incentive was introduced, the intention was to effect a behavioural change, which means we wanted those who do very well to be able to draw down additional money so that they can implement more labor-intensive projects. And what we have seen in the first year was it did not materialize necessarily in all cases, but what we have done since then was to tighten our monitoring procedures to ensure that the incentive money that's been drawn down will not be used for other purposes, but will actually be plowed back into the labor-intensive projects to create more work opportunities. Because, and if you would allow me, Chair, just to make a comment with regard to a whole range of questions that emphasize the importance of monitoring and evaluation, and we are mindful of that, and we have introduced, except for the site visits that we have, that CJ mentioned already, we've actually started with a quarterly data quality project. And so what we do with this, we go on a quarterly basis, we look at the data that's been submitted to us, and we actually get down to look both at the data quality as well as checking up on whether the women that they report to us are actually there, people with disabilities, youth, and the whole range of things. We have developed a standard format, and we will be sending to the Papori Committee, as he just said, a database of how many projects have been visited per province. And the key question always is to sample these properly so you can get an idea. Because just give honourable members an idea. Towards the end of the last reporting last year, we had data on more than 17,000 projects in EPWP. Now, which means from our side, we have to sample carefully to give us a proper idea of what's happening, and then we have to correlate that data with the efforts of both the national and provincial departments, where they also exercise execute site visits. So we are very mindful of that, and so we will definitely have, in our view, already strengthened the monitoring aspect, but we will intensify the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Anderson. Honorable Gator will be followed by Honorable Nguani.
You know, Chairperson, in person, you say, put TED as an open TED. When you talk, that is what is happening with your answers here. But before I get to that, the issue of daily rates, which differ, if you address that, whereby EPW in Joburg could pay 90 rand a day, in Eastern Peak 60 rand a day, is that addressed? And secondly, DG, you know, we went to visit some projects. There are some good and bad ones. The place in this city when you go over country, there's a unique one. The road there is made by EPW, the concrete road. Now, what I was getting the design there, the problem is that these municipalities are told by consultants that we cannot, we must use the machinery. Then you must then tell the, you must assist them technically so that they instruct the consultants to design a labor-intensive road. That is what I am saying. We had another project in Tabangulu. First of all, they didn't want us to go to the project. Then we went up from Mount, fortunately from there, and then they said that there was fire at the project. Then you see that road there, the road is there, there was no road anywhere. But that project is registered. That is what I'm talking about monitoring, because your officials from the Mthatha district went to us there. They should have known that there's no road there. That's why we're talking about monitoring. Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to raise.
Okay.
The stipend and the by monitor.
Honorable Chole will be followed by Honorable Magala.
Chair, on this district forum, the reporter says Gauteng don't want to establish those forums because there are 12 or 11. These forums, this establishment of these forums are compulsory or voluntary because we have to know. Thank you.
Honorable Magala,
Chairperson was not talking with some of the issues that come up. When we do oversight, we encounter some problems, especially when coming to people who are doing the work, you know, because some of the provinces don't understand, because when we ask them why, where are the disabilities, how many people living with disabilities we are having, they don't have them at all. Some of them, they don't understand what is the meaning of that. So if you do your job on monitoring, can you please emphasize on the policies that we must have 2% of such good things? Mm-hmm.
Lastly, DJ, if I'm not mistaken, it was in Nala Municipality where they were working on a lending state And yeah, CG smiling. You know, I got shock of my life, the methods that were used, two methods that were used for working on the strip. They were using asphalt and the second product. And I questioned that if you use asphalt, use asphalt. They are saying asphalt is the best method that they are using now because water cannot penetrate. But they were also using the second method to say, why waste a lot of money? That's why we are saying DDG is a specialist, needs to monitor on all these projects. It's just a waste of resources. You can use two construction methods in one strip of landing strip. And that landing strip is in a farm. And we questioned, how many of these planes are landing on this small strip? They say, no, sometimes when the farmer has what? And there was no answer. Because that strip, it was just a way of getting money. In a farm, DG, to say how many planes land on that strip, instead of utilizing money somewhere else. CG is smiling because I'm sure she was there. Can we also be told why two methods, construction methods, in one project, a small strip? Can respond because she was there. Did you not know in Nala were you there?
Honorable Chairperson, I did not visit the site itself, but I heard the questioning on the first night. And I know that the AG is currently engaging with the Free State Province, and they then sent through a report to the AG's request, which then indicates the project value and also indicates what was used. According to them, they've used bituminous surface treatment as the prime coat, and they've used
bitumen is a chemical from petrol that you mix to produce asphalt. That's my understanding where I read it. That's why they are saying right now there's no bitumen in South Africa, because out of bitumen they make asphalt. So that's why a lot of construction are at hold, because there's not bitumen in South Africa. That's my understanding.
Chairperson, I'm just giving feedback on I'm not an infrastructure person, so I'm only giving feedback on what's been sent to the AG in terms of the feedback, because we were asked to push for feedback to the AG. And they said they used a slurry seal, coat seal, and then it seems like that's fox spray treatment, and that seems to be the only thing that they indicate that they've utilized. And this is the response to the AG.
DG, you need to make a follow-up on that, because I read in the paper last week that there's a shortage of bitumen, and bitumen is used for making asphalt. So there's no way that they can say they use bitumen, because bitumen is a product. Subject to correction, but that's how I understood it.
Thank you, Chair. Just to give you assurance, we will follow up on this matter and come back to you. Yeah.
Are there still questions on the members?
No.
Baba Maguban?
No, it's
Dr. I think this is the debt meeting where we have been talking about the debt in Ndabangulu issue. I think the department should follow this thing up and find out the real cause of these people misusing government's money. Because a lot of money has been spent there, but there is nothing that you can identify that money has been used in this building.
We did not see the project. We only saw smoke. But on paper, the project was very good. And there are two projects in the Eastern Cape. The soup kitchen knife. Soup kitchen, because we were taken to a house, and the owner was just shocked and surprised. So what do you want in my yard? Meanwhile, we were taken to a soup kitchen. And those are the things that we need to make a follow-up on them, to say, This is what we want to know. That project, that road construction project, where we're taken to a very high mountain, and look at down there. That's why the road, meanwhile, the fire is burning there.
Yeah.
Akeila, I'm required by Wanyamavila, and we close the meeting.
Chairperson, no, nothing. Just the material used by Agrimo, I don't know, for roads, for making the roads. I am using that because that is a carbon entity and that is cheap to make roads. Secondly, because it can create a lot of work. I mean, it's very good, especially in our area, they use contractors to make these access roads and all that. But if you go to Northwest, that's why I say that if it's WC, it's got to have some sewage. They are using paving in Northwest, you know, it's very beautiful. And it creates work, the tables are made by people. You've got to, you know, try and come up with means and systems, please. Change the whole system, please. Please, we want to hear something from you that you have suggested this, you have done this. Please do that. I mean, you know, we're tired of hearing the same thing. It's been every year the same thing, the same thing. Please, thank you. Manya Mahila, you
close.
Chairperson, just to highlight one instance also that we have realized the issue of the municipality or the commission department grabbing the community project and claim those projects as their own, why they don't fund or assist in those projects, but they just show us those projects as one of the EPWP. When you question the beneficiaries, what intervention are they assisting you? Did you receive any funding? There's nothing, you know. Many of the home-based care, the social, especially the social sector projects, they don't assist those people financially, they don't monitor them, they don't matter, you know. But when we are there as a committee, they just, you know, show us those projects. They're not their projects. Because I realized something on a presentation that they have to establish a relationship with the NGOs. It's good, but they must also assist financially and also advise them accordingly. Then they claim that they are assisting these projects rather than, you know. But very bad teaching, they are not assisting.
Honorable members, thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much for presenting yourself here, Stanley. Thank you, CG, thank you, and the rest, Mr. the back there. To say, DG, we want EPWP project to be monitored. We don't want, when we visit, to do our oversight work, people just get into a township, transport people in a van, drop them at the grave site, and say, you just wait here. And when we arrive there, those people say, no, we're dropped this morning, we don't know what is happening here. We don't want that. It happened in our last visit, where people were just transported and dropped in a graveyard. No question, the time we were dropped here, we promised work, and this is our first day, and you know, we don't want that. I was otherwise, thanks for the presentation, and you should not just give us, you know, say, this is going to happen, it doesn't happen, DG. There must be service delivered. Thank you very much.